Everyone has a story to tell. What's yours? You're listening to Around the World with Dan Perry. Do you enjoy hearing tales of world adventure? Would you like travel advice from those who know the road well? Maybe you want to embark on a journey of your own, and you just need a bit of motivation to get started. You'll find all of that and more on Around the World with Dan Perry. That's what I would be hearing and experiencing if I were outside right now. Luckily, I'm not. Katie and I are holed up here in a hostel in Osaka, Japan. And the reason we're here is because there's a typhoon outside bombarding this land. But I'll come back to that in a few minutes. Let's jump back to last week when I recorded the last introduction to this podcast. Katie and I had just come back from visiting the Great Wall for the final time. Hopefully not the final time ever, but for a while at least. We went to a new section for us and a largely undiscovered section, unrestored for the most part, and had a great hike with a few friends. And my friend Patty, who has hiked down this part a couple of times now, he has befriended a local, and she let us stay at her place, and we had a giant dinner with her and some of the village residents nearby. Great nights to end our stay in Beijing, and then, of course, a lot of visiting old friends in our old stomping grounds. So the next day, we said goodbye to everybody and entered the next phase of our trip. We packed up all of our stuff into two panniers. These are bicycle bags. We each have two of them. They're really high-quality waterproof bags that you just clip onto the rack on the back of your bicycle. And we loaded those onto our bikes, which we had left behind last time we left China several months ago, and got everything packed up and took off from the school where we were staying out in the suburbs, rode for the last time into the city, straight past Dongzhimen, straight down to the train station. From there, we unloaded the panniers, folded up the bikes, and compacted them a little bit so that they're as small as possible, but they're still pretty big and bulky. Luckily, we were able to procure some really cheap bicycle carrying bags that somewhat disguise our bikes. So we wanted to go down to Shanghai, and I think most people would never dream of taking the slow train to Shanghai these days. The train that we took was 19 hours long. If you take the high-speed rail, it's only about 5 hours. But I think bikes are probably not allowed on trains, technically. And the thing is, everybody knew that we had bikes in these bags. They would just see the bags and go, yeah, bicycles. But because they were in bags and not outside, we had at least a decent chance of getting them onto the slow train without having to pay more money or just any further scrutiny. I was a little worried that that wouldn't be the case if we had taken the high-speed rail. So we took the slow train. We had to carry these things all the way across the train station, which, let me tell you, is quite the ordeal. Plus our two panniers, it's really heavy. Our shoulders were quite sore. But it worked out. And there was no space to put the bikes actually in our carriage at all. So I lugged them across the whole thing, past everybody who was sitting around watching us, and loaded them just next to a door that I hoped they wouldn't need. I'm pretty sure they didn't need it. Anyway, it seemed to all work out just fine, and the train ride to Shanghai was awesome. We got to finally read and relax and meet our bunkmates, and I just always love taking the slow trains. That was the last train that we're going to take, though, for a little while at least. If you'll recall, when we first started our trip, we flew to Helsinki, Finland. And from there all the way to Shanghai, China, we have covered every single mile by train, which is pretty cool when you think about it, that you can go that far by train and you can keep going. I've been all the way to southern Vietnam from China. It's all connected by train, and even going further into Europe, you can keep going. I love that idea that this whole giant two continents, I guess they're Europe and Asia, I guess are two continents, even though no one's ever really explained this to me, how this big piece of land that's connected can be two continents, but whatever. All of it is connected by train. I love it. But we were also quite excited to start the next phase of our trip, which is Japan. And of course, we could have just hopped in an airplane from Beijing and flown straight to Japan with our bikes. Probably would have had to pay some more money for luggage storage. But, you know, I'm not a big fan of flying. It's not a fear of flying or anything. It's just that you miss everything when you fly, everything that's in between. And part of the whole point of taking a long time to travel, we're taking a whole year off, is so that you get to see everything in between, or a lot of it anyway. Obviously, when you ride overnight, you're missing quite a bit. But you also get a nice comfy bed on a train. You also get the comforts that you wouldn't get on an airplane. It's so much more relaxed. If you've never done it, I highly recommend it if you happen to have the time. And there's one form of transportation that I think I actually like even better than trains. When we're talking about, obviously I like to bike, so if we just count where there's an engine involved, I love trains, but I think boats I like even better. So we decided to take a ferry from Shanghai to Osaka, Japan. Once a week, this ferry runs. We paid for the lowest level tickets. We were able to take a taxi to the port where the ferry was. And luckily the taxi driver asked a lot of people where we were supposed to go. And he was really helpful to us. He dropped us off exactly at the line where people were waiting to get on board. Everything went really smoothly, actually. I was a little bit worried we'd maybe miss this connection. We didn't have a ton of time in between. But it all went totally fine. All right, so we checked our bikes in, checked one of our panniers in, just like you would check in luggage on an airplane. And we just carried the other pannier onto the ferry. Let me tell you, this ferry was amazing. Like I said, we paid for the lowest level tickets, which basically just gives you a giant room with, like, if you're a man, it's 40 people in a room. And if you're a woman, I think there's 16. And you just get a floor space and a mattress or a mat to sleep on. But the thing is, this ferry was nowhere near full, so we just got upgraded automatically, as did everyone else who paid the lowest price, and we got these amazing rooms. And I had this bunk bed where there were curtains for privacy, and it was, like, so perfect that it wasn't so spacious that it feels cavernous, and it wasn't so tight that I felt claustrophobic. It was just the perfect size. And as this ferry was going at night, it just, like, rocked me to sleep, just like a little baby in his crib. And I slept better than I've slept in months. I forgot where I even was when I woke up. I was all disoriented, and I slept so well. So I'd highly recommend it. The other cool thing is we got to watch Shanghai go away, fade into the distance as we traversed the Yellow River. I love that feeling of seeing one continent go and seeing another continent come in from the horizon. Of course, I guess Japan still counts as Asia, but you know what I'm getting at. Ferries are awesome, or boats are awesome in general. I can't say enough good things about this boat. So we had 2 days aboard, one full day at sea, and then the following day, we made it into Osaka, Japan. And we went through the normal customs and immigration procedures that you'd go through entering any country. Got all of our stuff. Again, everyone knew we had bikes, but no one seemed to really care. Basically, just because they were folded and they were in the bags. That's what does it. It's like, we're not fooling anybody. We would have had to pay, I think, $40 extra if we had just rolled our bikes onto the boat. But since they were in bags, no extra fee. So there you go. And we've already gotten our tickets to go back to Shanghai, because the return ticket is half price when you buy a round trip. So we have a set amount of time to be in Japan. I think the 24th or 26th of November is our return date. So it's about a month, maybe a day or two longer than a month total. Once we got off the ferry, we unfolded our bikes, got all of our stuff packed up onto the bikes, the panniers all ready to go. And then we rode into central Osaka on the bicycles. We spent most of the first day in Japan just biking around and checking out the city. I was not necessarily blown away, because I guess I kind of had a feeling of what Japan might feel like. But I really enjoyed it nonetheless. It feels so different than China. I think it feels more similar to Korea. Like Korea and Japan feel more similar, but China's totally different. It's really orderly here. No one's honking their horns. People follow the rules on the road. Cars yield to you. People are allowed to bicycle, and in fact even encouraged to bicycle on the sidewalks, which is interesting. It can get a little hairy when there's a lot of people walking around, but it's very safe compared with biking down the middle of the road. So I really enjoyed that aspect of it. The food here is awesome. Osaka is right on the sea, so obviously there's a lot of seafood, and that's just part of the Japanese diet, I guess. We've only been here a few days, but I'm really enjoying Japan so far. So we spent a couple of days couch surfing in a really nice guy's place. So we got to meet him and learn a little bit about Japanese culture and about his life, and that was great. We spent all day. I guess we got in on Thursday. Then we spent all day on Friday, basically just exploring the city. And we had a few things that we, like errands we needed to run. When you're traveling for a year, you can't just go every day, like seeing the latest temple and the whatever else is the museums in town. You can't just always do that. You have to do normal life stuff. You have to buy groceries. You have to wash your clothes. You have to, you know, you got to like stock up on stuff. So we did a little bit of that. Our plan was yesterday to get up early and head out and bike to Kobe and then try to catch a ferry to, I forget the name of this island, but the island that's near Kobe, where we're going to bike around a little bit. We're still working out our route. We don't quite have it finalized yet. I think we won't really know where we're going to go until we're like halfway through Japan already, because we just don't quite know how far we can go in a day and how it's going to wind up. But we're excited to get going. The problem, as I said before, was this typhoon. Now, Katie and I are from the American Midwest. We've never experienced a hurricane, which is the same thing as a typhoon. And we heard a typhoon was coming, so we were a bit spooked out by that. So we decided to get a hostel for 2 days and hunker down, wait for it to pass. The weather forecast is looking really good for the next week after today. Now, as far as how dangerous this typhoon is, I think it actually isn't even a proper typhoon right now. It's just a tropical storm, and it's not hitting Osaka directly. It's out at sea a little bit. So all that's really happening here is a lot of rain. No, that's not a huge deal, but when you're on bicycles all day, it does suck to be in that heavy of rain. So I am glad that we decided to stay here. Anyway, tomorrow morning we're going to continue our journey, and as usual, I'm going to keep you up to date as time goes on, as much as I'm able to do so anyway. So let's get to my guests now for this week. While I was in Beijing, I recorded a few podcasts, and this one is with Brittany Dunn. And Brittany told me definitely by far the craziest, wildest welcome to Beijing snafu that I've ever heard. I've heard a lot of them, but this is the worst, let's put it like that. She's a great talker, and I spent pretty much the whole podcast just listening to her, just as you'll see, mesmerized by what she was telling me. I hope you enjoy listening in as well, because this is a hell of a story. And if you are listening to the story and start getting freaked out, like, oh my God, is that what China's really like? Well, we do kind of a post-mortem afterward, so I'm not going to give away any of the story beyond that, but obviously, I'm advertising myself here, but if you listen all the way to the end, I think there will be maybe an uplifting message to it all. Anyway, all that being said, let's now jump into my podcast with Brittany Dunn.
one of my first bosses in China, who was a mentor to me, really appreciated his style. He gave me a lot of autonomy, yet a lot of like good guidance. And he said, you know, entrepreneurs especially, like, you live your brand. You're never like off the record, right? So it's it's funny that like it made me think, like, you always have to love what you do. Like, if you aren't driven by your brand, right? If it's completely different from who you are as a person, like, I feel like you're gonna hit a wall, or there's gonna be like a phoniness or a facade at some point, right? If you're on. And that's why I always have trouble, like, if I really like a brand and like I find out that the co-founder or the founder, you know, just completely disagrees with like what they don't live the lifestyle that they're, you know, selling or whatever it may be. So I find that really, that stuck with me, and it was like, okay, now whatever I do professionally, whatever I choose to do, I have to believe in the brand. Even if it's like what other people would think is pointless or silly, like, I have to find like purpose in that work. And it was, and another thing just like sparked in my mind, when people have trouble with like employee retention, right? Like, you might have this amazing business, say like, say a gym, for example, and you have coaches, and you are struggling to keep, you have high coach turnover.
Okay.
And you're struggling to keep people in your business. You're like, I don't understand, you know, they're paid better than other places, but why are they not loyal? Why are they leaving me? And this was a problem. I know, when I first got to China, I went to a lot of these like HR and lunch and learns, and like trying to like learn more about China and connect with people and like find out what were problems that businesses were facing, because I was working in business English teaching and like teaching like soft skills, like leadership skills.
Sure.
And one of the biggest problems was employee retention, and especially amongst locals, they offered 500 kwai more a month, they jump ship, even if it means completely, you know, it's going to change their life. They have a completely disrupt their routine, taking a risk on a new job, but it would just, there was no loyalty. They would just jump at the money. So how do you get people to like buy into your brand or to like believe in you, right? That's the general message. So with that gym example, you know, you have like, say another gym, like gym. So there was gym A that's losing trainers, gym B, they say they have them, they pay them like a minimal fee, like it's nothing much. But if you get people to believe in what you're doing, and you have a strong vision of like, I'm socially motivated, or I'm motivated to change the world by doing this, this, and this, then money becomes less important, right? You're getting people to like access their value set. So I don't know why that was just triggered, but like that line of thinking, I was just trying to remember about like, when you said you wanted to talk to me, like what were my ideas in early China life, like when I first got here, versus like how do I think now?
And yeah, like, that's a good
those
topic.
Those have stuck with me since the very beginning, like that those first experiences when I just got to Beijing. And actually, that was not even when I first got to Beijing, that was 4 months later, after my life was somewhat more normal and I was feeling good and optimistic, because when I first got here, it was quite traumatic. I had one of those, like, it's probably pretty standard as an expat, as you know, like those, like, ooh, those silly welcome to China experiences where you're like, I should have known better. I should have done more research. I shouldn't have taken that risk. But it was,
what was it?
Well, okay. So that was quite a story. So I was working, like, as we were talking about earlier, I was working for a university. I was working on a grant, and I was a program coordinator. But I missed working more with people. I had primarily, my responsibilities were to do a lot of administrative work, logistics, like booking rooms, assisting my boss on a lot of different projects. But it didn't require me to, like, get up from my seat. And I remember at one point my boss asked me, like, where are you going? Why do you keep moving? I'm like, I'm just going for a walk. Like, I just need to, like, gonna walk and get a coffee and I'll come back. I can't sit all day.
That was after you first got to China?
No, sorry. That was before. This is in New Jersey. This is the Garden State, right outside of New York. And I was commuting 2.5 hours each way driving.
Oh.
So
brutal.
Yeah, it was pretty, it was not a great situation, but I was like, it's a good job. I have health insurance and it's a professional job that, you know, like looks great, you know, and it was on paper, it was what I wanted to do. Like I was working in education. I was working with people, was helping students. But it turned out that like, I didn't get to do with the majority of my time what I felt made me happy. It was interact with people, like have connection. And so it was just a lot of emails, just like even picking up the phone was awkward. And my boss at the time would just be like, just send an email, like don't pick up the phone. And I knew I had to leave. And one of the things that stuck with me was my first job when I had graduated from university. I worked for this Disney college program. So it was an exchange program with our university, Montclair State University. And at the time, it was the largest J-1 visa program in America. So it kind of took off by accident. A professor from the university pitched to a few Chinese universities, and all of a sudden, there was a cohort of 150 Chinese college students coming through our university and then going to Disney World, and they needed a university to sponsor their visas. And so there was an opportunity to create an academic program. And actually, the program they created was quite fantastic. They made it really affordable, so it was cheaper to study through this Disney 5-month internship program with Montclair State University than to study as a normal exchange student.
Oh, wow.
And you got college credit. Like, honestly, this program I really believed in. That's why I was eager to work for them. I mean, you got 12 credits. You got an opportunity to start all of your coursework on campus at a U.S. college. And you got like a travel and tourism program in New York and New Jersey for 10 days. Then you went to Disney World and you did your internship, which meant you worked in the park as, you know, either in concession, on the rides. But it was like, you know, when you work for Disney, you know, you have to follow all the rules. You have to work super hard. Like they reward, you know, top performers, right? So I think it's like the best first job that maybe a student who's never had a job before could experience, because it's going to teach them a lot and help them grow. And they have to also learn how to kind of balance being an adult, because you have to balance a full-time job, which is your internship, with taking Disney classes, which are like what we were talking about earlier with Katie, like kind of alternative project-based work where it was not traditional education. So it was exposing them to like kind of a very different type of classroom setting where they would have to do like case studies and they'd have to learn about marketing in different alternative ways.
Okay.
And lead projects. So, you know, the Disney courses are like really, really, you know, well put together and well run. And then they also had to take Montclair courses at a distance and complete projects. So they had a lot to balance. And then some of their jobs, they'd be closing the park. They wouldn't get home till like 1 or 2 a.m. And then their Disney courses were kind of in the morning. So they had to really balance everything, more so than that in China. It was mostly China, some Korean schools, but where they would just be studying full time.
Sure.
They wouldn't be working. So I had the opportunity when I graduated, because I worked with the Global Education Office, you know, volunteering. I would speak in promotion of study abroad on campus. So when I graduated, they told me about this opportunity to work as, I think my original title was like ambassador, you know, one of the student ambassadors. But I was a graduate. So I would be on site with the students. So I kind of acted like a tour guide / like RA, resident advisor, and just like logistics person. And then, you know, of course, I remember one of the first programs, we were walking down Wall Street with 150 students behind us. And, you know, like, you know, we didn't necessarily know where we were going, because nothing was like meticulously planned out. And so right away, the university started identifying people to like run the program like more efficiently and make it like a full fleshed out program. And so that was really exciting, because I got to learn on the job and I was like, hey, here's some feedback from the trips. And then I got an opportunity to work in the office and design some of the trips. And then so part of the year I was out with the students, and like we'd take them to Broadway shows, we'd take them to Medieval Times. I'd be sitting in the classroom with them and making sure like all the tech equipment was working. And so it was just a very people, like hands-on, people-oriented job. And that's what sparked my interest in China. because I met in the course of 2 years, 2,000 Chinese college students.
Wow.
And a few Korean college students as well. And I was, the questions they were asking me were really surprising. Some questions I got were, you live with boys? And at the time I was living in New York City, and I had, you know, three amazing guy roommates and one girl roommate, and like it was great. It was like, you know, like an American sitcom to them, and they were like super curious about like my living situation and my background. And we threw them like a going away party, and it was kind of like a prom, and they all dressed up, and okay. You know, that we would lead like group dances and stuff. And so they'd ask me like, is it okay to like, or is it okay in America for like girls and guys to just be friends? And I was really taken aback because they weren't young kids. They were only a few years younger than me. They were like maybe 19 to 22. So I just noticed a lot of innocence in their backgrounds. Like, it was just complete, like, curiosity. And at one point, I remember we were outside of, I believe it was Circle Line Cruises in New York, which is right near, at the time, the pier was right near the Chinese Embassy in New York.
Okay.
So they were on the bus, and we passed the embassy, and our students see a lot of protesters outside of the Chinese Embassy, so there's, you know, protesters for various reasons,
sure,
as you know.
As I imagine.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the students were really curious, like, hey, what's going on? And we told them, okay, well, here you have the right. This was many years ago now. But now you have the right to peacefully protest. You know, you're allowed to say what you want. You can witness this in action while you're in the States. I was trying not to promote them, you know, like go out and protest. But then they were really angry about what the protesters were protesting about.
Okay.
So they asked us if they could protest the protesters. And so this was a very interesting experience. They made signs in Chinese and like put them on the bus. But it was very peaceful. Like the protesters on the street just sort of laughed and like understood. It's like, okay, of course they're gonna say, you know, Tibet belongs to China, no problem. Like,
yeah,
that's what's gonna happen. But for us, we're like, this is a really interesting experience. And a lot of times, by the beginning of the Disney internship and the end, they had become a lot more resilient. They weren't complaining about the sun anymore, or because like a lot of times they would be out in the sun and they'd get tan, and you
since
know,
moving here, I've learned that
and
the
it was
sun
like,
is the enemy of the Chinese.
Yeah. So it was really cute. The questions they would ask, like, does this like, will I be like, I mean, some of the things they would say, like, I'd have to talk to them, like, that's not politically correct to say that. They're like, I have the chocolate skin now, and you know, it was very innocent in what they would say, and we're like, okay, you can't, you know, say something like that. That's completely, you know, not cool, not acceptable. Here are acceptable terms in English. You know, I have a suntan. I'm tan. Look at me. I've got some sun. You know, so it was interesting.
It's fascinating. Like in the course of 2 minutes, you mentioned stuff that is okay to say in China, but not okay to say in America. And then the reverse also, you just were talking about.
Right. And so you know? I found like that job actually, and it's interesting how things come full circle. Like, they still have, like, a huge place in my heart. And I have a colleague that I work with back then who now will still come to China multiple times a year. And he's become a good friend. And actually, a few years ago, I had the opportunity to help them out on the China side. And I started going to Chinese universities and speaking in promotion of study abroad, but specifically our program, and talking to them quite candidly about what it was like. And then doing interviewing workshops, like, so what it's like to interview with an American company, especially with Disney World, what they're going to, you know, ask of you, what's appropriate to wear, what's not appropriate to wear.
Yeah.
And so it was really cute. I went to a university, I won't mention which one, but I went to a university and, you know, they all had their note. And I said, please prepare a notebook to like write down notes from the presentation. I did that specifically not because it's the most efficient way. Like, some people take notes on their phone, some take them on laptops. I don't mind, but specifically in this setting, you don't ever want to give the impression that you're like surfing the internet while you're listening to a presentation.
Yeah, sure.
So I wanted to make them aware of that, and I wanted to see what kind of notebooks they would bring. Mm-hmm. And of course, like, one of the program coordinators like had a super cutesy like knockoff Disney notebook.
Yeah. And play with Ricky Ross.
It was, I forget exactly what it looked like, but I had mentioned to him, hey, like I held it up as an example. Guys, make sure you don't have any like counterfeit Disney products, yeah. like for the Disney yeah. internship interview. You know, that won't look good for you. So yeah. even that, like little things like that, I felt like I could add benefit just from here's how an American might approach the interview and here's what will be expected of you and here's what they're looking for. They want to see what your mindset is. They want to see how hard you're willing to work. They want to see like what you think about random situations. So just be prepared to have any question asked of you. And, you know, even just like cultural differences in like, I don't know if you've noticed here, a lot of Chinese will make that like, ah, like sound like, or if they don't like something, they might be like uber dramatic about it. Like, no.
Yeah,
like,
that's true.
It's like, but I think it's quite funny. It's like almost like a dramatic way of reacting to something that gives like maybe a little bit more like character and call. Like, I don't get offended by it now, but I'm like, but to someone who might not understand that, they might think you're being really difficult or really dramatic.
Yeah.
So just be aware of your nuances. And I said, just like me coming to China, you know, I was walking around like an idiot in the beginning, like making so many mistakes. And I had to ask friends and people had to tell me, hey, you really don't say that. Or, hey, just like, don't worry about this. Or like, you know,
there's a lot that you need to learn. Yeah.
And this is what's great, like about, you know, study abroad or living in another country, like you're forced out of your comfort zone. And I know as expats, sometimes like people have a tendency to just think like the way we were raised is the right way.
Yeah, sure.
But you know, and it can be really frustrating if people don't understand the way you're thinking. But what I found is one of the biggest like tests or pieces of learning for me here is to just try to always put myself in somebody else's perspective and like kind of float above my body and my little like American upbringing and figure out where they're coming from.
Sure. Yeah.
And that helps me kind of relax whenever I'm in a situation I don't understand. But I wish I'd had that when I first got to China because of, you know, what had happened. It was quite a crazy story, which I'll tell in a second.
Yeah, I'm dying to hear.
But anyway, with it's leading up to that. I was working for this program for a few years, and then I had gotten the opportunity to work for the other university. It was a more stable job, you know, like I said, health insurance and stuff. So,
now that's your second job.
Yeah. Okay. So my second job, but I was no longer working with international students, and I was no longer more like people facing. So, you know, when you're in a situation where you feel like things can't get any worse, like it's just like you hit your like I'm so unmotivated and I'm just not happy, and like it's a pain, it's a struggle having to prepare to get to work. And then also I had to get up at like, you know, 5 a.m and like drive, and I hated driving that much. I think it's ruined me driving forever. Like I now when I go back to the States, I don't want to drive. Like I didn't renew my license even, but I know I eventually will.
For a while. I'm really into automated cars, too.
Oh, really? Okay.
We'll talk about it later, but I don't think we'll have to drive too much longer.
Okay.
To be honest. But
that's true.
Continue, please.
Okay. Well, that's interesting, because I hadn't actually driven a vehicle except a bike in a long time. And when I was in Bali recently, you had to be on a motorbike to be safe. I found if you walked on certain parts of the streets, like, it wasn't super safe.
Oh, so annoying.
I know, right?
You can't even walk.
You can't. No, honestly. So I was like, okay, I'm going to have to get on a motorbike, which I'm always a little bit apprehensive about just with safety. But I'm like, okay, I've driven a car for a long time. It should be okay. I'll be careful. And it was fine. But it kind of flashed back to like, oh my goodness, when like I couldn't use the power of my own legs to move me, like either on a bicycle or on foot, it was like, oh, this is how easy it is to just kind of quickly get from place to place. And maybe that's not what I like, but anyway, I reached a point, it was about the fall of 2010, and I was like, I'd been wanting to go abroad for a while, and I know I could wait a little longer and like, you know, apply for a serious program or have everything lined up in a nice, neat way. but I'm like, I just need to go now. I have this fear, and I didn't say this to people, but I had this fear that if I don't go in the immediate future, maybe like something better will happen in America, or like I'll get a better job here, or something will change, and I'll not, and I won't leave, and then it'll, all of a sudden, I'll be like, oh, it's too late to go now. It's, you know, I'm too immersed in something. And
it's really true, yeah.
And I'm really happy I'd made the decision not to get. I had a beat up car, like old Jeep Grand Cherokee, which my dad still has now. Okay. And I didn't want to finance a car. I didn't want to, you know, try to start saving for, like, to own property. I was like, no, I don't want anything to, like, tie me down. I want to just have the freedom to go. And I was like, okay, I really would like to go to Europe. But before that, I'd like to go to Asia for a little while, because I know from study abroad that you don't really learn about another culture on maybe a short trip, but living in a place for a little while or even for a few months, you really get a better sense of like what a place is like. And so then I'm remembering my experiences with the Chinese students who were super lovely, and like I had just such positive experiences like helping them and being their kind of like first American girl or woman that they interacted with, that I was like, okay, now I want to go to China and like see where they've come from and see what it's, what life is like there. So I found, I think it was like on goabroad.com, I found this internship that sounded kind of like my first job. It was helping Chinese universities and American universities work together and form partnerships. And, but it was an unpaid internship. So of course, you know, like I was like, that'll be fine. It's cheap to live in China. They're going to pay for my living and, like give me a food stipend. So it'll be fine. Like, okay, I'll make it work. It's only 6 months. And, you know, I remember my mother being like, I'm worried that this is not going to be good. And you're just being spontaneous. You're like too impulsive, not spontaneous. You're being too impulsive. And I remember just getting defensive and being like, no, it's going to be fine. It's going to work out. But of course, I actually had some reservations because some of the communication that I was getting back from the questions I was asking,
yeah,
was very weird. It was like, you will be working for East China Normal University. And then another one would be like, you'll be working with this language center. And
yeah,
I was just like, not everything was adding up. They sent me pictures that were too good to be true about like my apartment where I was going to be living. And they're like, it is in the city center. I'm like, can you send me an address? And they gave me some arbitrary address, right? And they're like, we will send someone to pick you up at the airport. So you'll come and you will work and you'll go to like this international education expo, and that'll be part of your job. So that basically they said you'll be working to form partnerships and to help the program run. But like I should have had my spidey sense was like tingling. My gut feeling was like, this doesn't seem right. But you know what? I talked to a few people who had lived in China before, and actually coworkers who had come back from China, and they're like, oh, that's just kind of how things are in China. Don't worry about it. Like, you know, it might sound shady, but it's probably fine. It's maybe just the English level too. And so I was like, okay, I'm just going to take the leap. It's going to be fine. And I'll be doing kind of what I wanted to do with my original job, just on the China side, which is super exciting. With my original job, I had hoped one day they'd send me to China, and now I'm just going to go on my own and I'll be there all the time and it'll be fine. So I'm at the airport and the number they'd given me to call didn't work. No one picked me up.
Oh man.
I have two big suitcases, which was so stupid. I'm laughing at myself now. Like, who comes to China with two huge American sized suitcases, like,
sure, yeah,
and like carry ons and stuff. And so I'm waiting, I'm calling, I'm emailing, nothing back. And so I see this like a random like foreign guy is like walking around. He's like, oh, are you, you know, like, are you looking for a hotel? Are you trying to get into town? I'm like, yeah, I guess so. 'Cause now it's quite late. I need to sleep. He's like, okay, I found this guy over here who said he's, you know, got a hotel for like 180 kwai a night or something. And at that point I didn't really understand like what was reasonable rates and stuff. And I'd asked at the information counter and they're like 600 kwai for this fancy hotel. And so this was back in early 2011. And I was like, oh, that's really expensive. But like, I guess good for like American prices, but I'll try to get the cheapest possible because I'm not supposed to be spending any money because I have an internship, an unpaid internship.
Right.
And I don't want to waste the savings that I had had. And so then we get in a car with other foreign people and they pull up to this like the shadiest hotel ever. And immediately all of us are like, turn us around, bring us back to the airport. And so they're not happy. They bring us back, and then the guy's trying to charge me money to, like, 100 kwai to unload my suitcases and everything. And luckily I wasn't conned by that, and I just, you know, was like, give me my suitcases. But he just, like, dropped them. And so then I'm without the cart, and I'm, like, dragging them. And so finally I was like, all right, just take, like, I'll just go to the fancy hotel for now. Like, I had no idea, like, how to get into the town. I was jet lagged, super tired. And so this little bellhop comes, like, with a little cap, and like I went to the G Hotel, so it wasn't like it wasn't like up there with the Langham or like the Hilton, but it was nice enough. It was like a nice Chinese hotel and had internet, and I'm just freaking out, like, what's happening? No one's here. And I'm thinking back on the situation, like, I'm such a princess, and like, oh my God, no one picked me up from the airport. Like,
whoa, it's me.
Whoa. And it just got just like more surprising from there. Eventually the next day I get these like Chinglish emails. It's like, you messed up. You didn't tell us the right flight, which was untrue. And we didn't, like, I just think they didn't want to come and get me. They're like, you have to come to this address, and it was in Jianguomen. Bring all of your stuff, and, like, you will work the whole day, and then we'll take you to your apartment. So it's like, oh, okay. And so then I got overcharged. The hotel arranged, like, a black cab. It was, like, 250 kwai from near the airport to, like, Dongzhimen, which, you know, now I know I'm, like, I totally got swindled.
Should cost, like, 80 kwai.
Yeah, yeah, or not even Dongzhimen, sorry, Jianguomen. And I get to, like, Oriental Plaza, and I get in, and I'm presented with this, like, FedEx envelope, and it's, like, this letter, it's, like, this Chinglish letter, or not even Chinglish letter, just, like, the broken English letter from my boss, quote-unquote, who was, like, I cannot be there, so we are hoping that you will go to Nanning in South China for, because I was supposed to have 2 weeks off when I first got there to, like, acclimate into Beijing.
Yeah.
So instead of you having vacation, you go down to South China, and you will teach 4 students who are going to go study in Italy English to pass an interview. You'll be there for a month, and then you can come back to Beijing and start your job. And I'm like, wait, what? I'm confused. Like, what? Why? I didn't come here to be an English teacher. And, like, I'm in the Italian language testing center, some, like, sub office that's what was on the walls. And I'm like, wait a second, like, what's going on? This guy who introduced himself as Peter was a very strange character, and he's, like, burping and farting all at the same time, and he's, like, shouting at me and saying, you were late and you owe us money, you owe us a 100 kwai because we went to the airport. And I was like, dude, I'm not paying you. Like, I didn't mess up, but, like, you know, I didn't want to be that annoying, like, shouting American. So I was just trying to be nice. I was like, no, maybe we figure it out later. Like, I think maybe there was a misunderstanding. And I was trying to just be, like, go with anything. Like, just be open to anything. So I was like, okay, I guess I could go to Nanning. I don't really know where that is. And they're like, it's by Vietnam. So you can, during Chinese New Year, because I came before Chinese New Year, during Chinese New Year, everything will be shut down. So then you can have your holiday. But I was like, but you're not paying me any money. So I don't really want to be spending money traveling around.
Yeah.
Like, I just want to set up my life in Beijing. They're like, well, you can't come back during Chinese New Year because that'll be very expensive to fly. Too expensive to come back. So they put me on right away. Peter made me sit in the office all day. Like, he's like, you will test their English level. So I was like, had headphones on, and I was just like interviewing poor Chinese students and like talking to them to see what their English was like, and no one was telling me any information.
They sent you down to Nanning by this point, or
not yet? This is the first day, day one.
Still day one.
And I hadn't eaten anything, like, besides like what I could find at the hotel. And they're like, just sit in this office, and then they're like bringing me hot water and like test their English level. And I'm like, okay, I don't want to be difficult, so I'll just do that. I'm like, when are we gonna, like, can I drop my suitcases? Just leave your suitcases here, and then we'll like bring you to your apartment later. And I'm like, okay, I guess that sounds reasonable. And like throughout the day, it just was getting like weirder and weirder. And then finally they're like, you will meet your new office workers down in Nanning. They are excited to have you. And so I had a Skype call with them, and actually these women sounded really nice. And they were like, we're so happy you're going to be coming down here, Brittany. And like, thank you for coming. And I was like, okay, maybe they're going to explain what's happening. These people seem nice. Like, they're going to tell me what's going on down when I get to this place called Nanning. And I didn't even have internet, like, on no smartphone, or like, they didn't give me Wi-Fi for my computer. So I I had no idea, like, I didn't even have the opportunity. I couldn't even access. It was like in all Chinese settings on the keyboard. So they just would like hit the button for me and I would like talk to people and test their English. So I couldn't even like research where the heck I was going. And they're like, so, and I was getting information very piecemeal. Then Peter is like at 9 o'clock at night. So by this point I'd been there all day. They gave me like, I think like greasy, Jianbing or something throughout the day, like one kind of like delivery of some greasy Chinese food that I didn't even know what it was. And I was like, okay. So at 9 o'clock, he like takes me out like in his car that's filled with very cutesy like flowers, and it's like, it's a little quite surprising for like a middle-aged Chinese man. It's like all like
burping and farting, man.
Yeah, yes, exactly. And he's at the same time sexually harassing me and insulting me, and then like telling me how lucky I am about everything in broken English. And I was just trying to understand who this guy was. And he's like, he was trying to tell me he was my boss, like he was my manager. But the paper had said he is your life secretary. He is like the assistant that will help you like set up your life.
Oh, he's working for you.
Not working for me, but like they didn't translate it well. Basically, sure. He was just like the office like driver and like, or whatever kind of shady establishment this was. He was just someone who worked for the office, and but he wanted to like dominate and like assert his like masculinity and his authority over me by doing like shouting at people. And all the intern girls, it turns out, were really scared of him.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, this guy, like, I'm getting a sense even the locals are finding him a little bit weird. And I was like, okay, well, I'm just going to be, like, nice and, like, see what happens. So he's like, okay, we will go and you will have duck. You will have famous, like, Beijing duck. And I'm like, okay, sure, thank you.
Okay.
So he takes me to this kind of, like, dirty restaurant. And then he's like, here, I have a gift for you. And it's this bottle of, like, Great Wall wine. I was like, okay. But I was, like, too afraid to drink anything. I was like, no, I don't want to, like, be drunk. So I was like, I'm okay. Like, I don't need to drink, but I'll save it. And he was, like, really offended I didn't drink the wine. But I ate the duck, and I mean, it was pretty good. Like, I was like, okay, this is cool.
Right.
And then he's like, now you pay.
No.
Yes. Yeah. He's like, so I was like, I guess this is like how it's done. I was like, oh, this just seems so weird. Like, it wasn't like, let's split the bill. He's like, no, you pay. And so I was like,
pay for him too.
Yeah. He's like, you're an American. Like, Americans are so rich. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm not rich. And I was like, I'm here for an internship. But I was like, okay, this is weird. So then we drive to the, like, what turns out to be, like, at past the end of line 5, so like north of line 5, you would have to take a bus for 20 minutes, but in the car it was like a 10 minute like kind of just from the subway stop to where we were staying was like a 10 minute drive.
Okay.
And but it's this like kind of like, it looks like kind of like old suburban like American houses, but they're all like very run down. And then we pull into this, like, cold house that literally no one had been in for a long time. And I think, like, the day before, Peter had, like, just thrown his, like, underwear and toothbrush in. And he's like, this is your apartment. And I'm like, but this is not the center of the city. And he's like, this is where you will be. You will be happy. And I'm like, oh, okay. So, and he's like, this is the bathroom. But you can't use this bathroom. If you want to use it, you have to use the downstairs bathroom, which had no shower. And it was just a squatter. But the upstairs bathroom was normal. It just wasn't very clean, but it had a shower and it had a normal toilet. And I was like, wait, so I can't use the bathroom right next door to my room? If I want to use that, I have to pay. He's like, you pay 100 kwai a week to use that.
And I'm to like, use the bathroom?
Yeah. And I was like, it's like, I don't really think that's, I don't really think that's going to work. But at this point, I was just like, he's like, you could use it tonight. That's fine. I was like, okay. And he's like, tomorrow, we have to take you to get like a phone, and then we have to put you on the train. And I was like, okay. And he was like, he's like, if you want heat, like, we can put you in a hotel. But like, you'll have to pay for it, or you can stay here, but the heat won't be fixed for a while. And it's January, it's freezing. So luckily there was a space heater, and I was like, I guess I'll just stay here, because they didn't really give me the option to even go to the hotel. It was pretty clear that they're like, no, you just stay here. And I was like, okay, I'm just going to be open. I'm just going to just keep smiling until, like, until I figure it out. And
I can't believe you're still, like, sticking with it at this
point. It only gets better. And then, so the next day he's like, I was completely at the mercy of him. Like, I didn't have any independence. I wasn't allowed to just to kind of go. There was nothing around me, too. And, like, everything's in Chinese, too. I didn't speak any Chinese. And there were no shops or anything where I could go and buy what I needed. And he was like, I will take you to Carrefour. And, like, we will get what you need for Nanning. And I was like, okay. And at this point, I was like, just play along, whatever. And so in the morning, he takes me all over town. And then finally, we go eat greasy food. And he's like, we are being so kind by paying for your train ticket. It's very expensive. And I was like, you're being so kind. What are you? Okay. I was like, I'm being kind by agreeing to go to some place I don't know about. And he's like, you're very lucky because Nanning is much warmer than Beijing right now. Beijing is very cold, but Nanning is like very green and very warm. And I'm like, okay, try to be positive about it. Yeah, it's next to Vietnam, but I don't need to go to Vietnam right now. Like, to do that later when I'm more established. And I'll just try to be excited about it. And at least these people that I'm going to go meet in the office down there seem really nice and happy to see me. And so I get on a train, and it's a hard sleeper. And so
you got a sleeper though.
Yeah. Which I was like, woohoo! But they got me the bottom one.
Yeah.
And if you've never been, and I know you guys must have been, but if you've never been on a Chinese train before, if you're in the hard sleeper, there's like three bunk beds, and so there's six kind of in a compartment, but the compartments don't have a door, so it's like everything's open in the aisle. If you want a door or like privacy, you have the soft sleeper, but there's still four people sleeping in your, you know, compartment.
Yep.
So I was really tired and I was like kind of on edge, and there's a bunch of like smoking men all around me, and I like kind of passed out for a little bit. I woke up and there's two men sitting at the foot of my bed just like smoking, and like I'm just kind of wrapped up in my like makeshift blanket and like sleeping on my passport and my wallet and stuff, and I was like super uncomfortable. But I'm just kind of then like looking around me and like just noticing that the whole train is kind of like this. Like during the day, everyone sits on the bottom bunk.
Yeah.
And, but no one, you know, it didn't matter that there was like some random foreign girl still sleeping. They're still going to sit there.
Yeah, it's just normal. Yeah,
it's fine, you know. Yeah. So I found that really funny that, you know, I was like, okay, I'm just going to have to keep like, I was like on alert the entire time. Then at some point, a younger girl had like entered like our little area, and she was in the bed across from me, and she actually spoke English. And I was like, okay, oh my goodness, like one person can like, I can speak to someone. Like, and she was like, oh, I'm a student. I'm from the Guangxi province, but I go to school in Beijing. So I'm going home for Chinese New Year, just going a little earlier. And so she's like, oh, the city is like really cold right now, actually, because that city, like in the south of China, we don't use heat that often. I mean, she was saying we don't use air conditioning that often, but I figured out she meant heating. And so it's very cold. Like everyone wears their jackets everywhere. And I was like, what? I was like, oh, okay. But she was like my first like positive interaction. I was like, okay. She made me feel nice, and she gave me like Chinese snacks, and like she was very sweet. And so in Nanning, they picked me up, and then for the next 2.5 to 3 weeks, I was working for, it was like an English studio, like an English language training center that was somehow, and I still to this day can't figure out exactly how, affiliated with the company that I was supposed to work for in Beijing. That wasn't really a company.
Okay.
But they were, the Peter and his crew were like sourcing teachers for schools around China. And so that was like part of what they do. They did a little bit of everything, right? There were, so they had a teacher who, an Italian teacher who came and halfway down decided to quit. Was like, I'm not going to put up with this anymore. Like I'm leaving. So what they did is they knew that I was coming in. So they're like, well, we'll just send the American down there. Even though, and these students, their English or their Italian is not good enough to have the interview in Italian, but they also have the option to take an interview in English. So we could get, they're like, they printed me out, honestly, Chinglish questions to ask them, and to just, like, they wanted me to just teach them to memorize answers. And I was like, okay, we're going to have a little talk about teaching. We're going to have a little talk about, like, how to interview. This is not how to best prepare these young students to go through a university interview.
Yeah.
And so they were like, okay, Brittany, that's great. Wow, oh, you have, like, okay, cool. So they were really flexible, and I was like, okay, I have no information about what my life is going to be like in Beijing, But in Nanning, everybody's super nice to me. Like, a few people in the office were, like, sort of, like, taking turns, like, helping me, like, find food. And then they kind of assigned this one really nice guy who had spent 10 years in New Zealand to kind of be my friend. They're like, you will help her. And but he was a really nice guy, and we ended up getting along. And so we would, like, go out, and he would take me to all the different places, like, in the area that, like, I needed to know. And but then Chinese New Year came, and everything shut down. And the office was unavailable to help me. And, like, every day they're like, you have to Skype with your job in Beijing at 5 o'clock. And at 5 o'clock every day, something would go wrong. And they're yelling at me. And they're like, it's your fault. You're not here. You're causing problems. And you're, like, you're on vacation. I'm like, I'm not on vacation. I'm doing the job you told me to do.
Yeah, they sent you there.
And I still don't understand what I'm going to be doing in Beijing. Yeah. And you're giving me no information. My boss was an Eastern European who would never talk to me on the phone. She would only send me, like, messages and emails, so I still to this day don't know if she exists.
Oh, really?
And it was like Peter actually sending her emails, and there was a lot of shadiness going on. But anyway, wrapping up Nanning, I start during Chinese New Year, I get really sick. I met they at the school, there was a really nice British guy who worked there who became a really good friend of mine. And he was also new to China, and he was like, okay, I have limited Chinese, but, you know, like, do you want to, like, if it's Chinese New Year, you want to take, like, a train ride and go see, like, this part of China called Beihai? And I'm like, okay. On the end of Beihai, I started getting sick. And so he, like, helped me go to the hospital, and, like, between the two of us, we were trying to figure out, like, how to actually go through the procedure. And there's, in a Chinese hospital, local hospital outside of Beijing, even everyone's shoving you out of the way. I'm getting, like, body checked by little old men and little old ladies. And they, of course, just prescribe right away drip antibiotics without examining me. They're just like, this is what you need. You have to pay 900 kuai, and you have to come back for 4 days and do, like, infusions of the drip antibiotics. And now that's, I don't like needles, and, like, I was really freaked out. But I was like, okay, I'm feeling really sick. Like, I'm, like, super dizzy. Like, I can't eat anything. Like, I'm not getting better. I'll just do it. Which, knowing what I know now about health, like, that was, of course, the wrong move. Yeah. And, of course, after the few days, I didn't get any better. And I checked myself up. I think Paul was traveling. I forget what, but I didn't want to impose on him anymore. And I just told him, like, hey, I'm okay. And, like, just, like, go about your business. And I'll meet up with you after Chinese New Year. And so I'm spending a lot of time. I checked myself into this hostel. Oh, because where they were putting me up while I was down there was in this, like, hotel that had no heat. And they weren't paying for it during Chinese New Year. They're like, well, we'll pay for it, but now it's the holiday, so we're not paying for it. So I found actually a hostel online that was owned by an American, and I was like, I'll just go there. It's cheaper, and I can speak to people, and, like, it's maybe more comfortable. And the guy, I didn't want him to know that I was sick, too, because I wanted him to kick me out. Yeah. So I just kind of kept, I got a private room, and I just kind of kept to myself, and I just kept going back to the hospital, and, like, they weren't listening to me, and they kept trying to give me antibiotics. I'm like, no, this didn't work. Like, so finally, everyone came back from Chinese New Year, and I'm, like, fainting in the streets. Like, and so the guy from New Zealand, or who had lived in New Zealand, Jordan, was super lovely. Was like, okay, I'm coming with you to the hospital. And we had met this doctor in this cafe, and he was like, come to my hospital, and I will take your blood. Like, I'll figure out what's wrong with you. And I was like, okay. So it was Valentine's Day at this point, and I was like, you know, I had no energy. I really hadn't eaten in a while. And I, like, had no depth perception. So I was like, something's up. I think it might be a virus, and or the welcome to China flu. And so they take chest x-rays of me, but I wasn't coughing. So I was just like, it was anything they could do to rack up the bill. Yeah. And finally, they take my blood, and the shocking thing is they give it to my friend Jordan to hold. They give him the vial of my blood. And he's like, I am your bloody Valentine. And like, totally normal that, like, you just would hold your friend's blood. Like, I was, like, really freaked out by that. They put me on an IV drip of fluids because I was, like, really dehydrated and, like, really out of it. And I started to feel a little bit better. And they're like, okay, you need, like, Chinese medicine. You, like, because Western medicine's not going to help you here. Like, you have, like, a virus. But you need rest and no stress. And I was like, that's probably not going to happen for a while.
Yeah.
But anyway, I was like, I'm going to will myself to get better. But it's wrapping up. I'm supposed to now be going back at the end of Chinese New Year to Beijing. And everyone in Nanning, I had started to feel more comfortable. I guess it was maybe a better ease into China because people were super sweet in the South and like willing to help me. And they're like, why would you leave here? Like, you could just work for the office here. Like, you could work, it's not the, you could work for the English school here. Like, they need teachers and like, you're a good teacher and we'll give you a job. And, you know, I remember the pay was really low and I was like, well, no, I didn't come to China to like live in this random city. Like, I came to be in Beijing, you know, like I had my plan. I was like, no, sure. I don't want to just quit. Like, I, even if this company is being shady, like, I don't want to just quit and leave and be like, I'm not coming back to Beijing. And so it was really hard to say goodbye because I had like been, I used to take like field trips with my students. Like I would take them out on the town and like we would go to the supermarket and we would like discuss like the different types of vegetables that we would see. And they would take me to like museums and then we would have conversations and lunch in English. And I got, they were like super sweet and they all had Italian names because they're going to school in Italy. So it was like Mario, Luciana, Pablo, like. They were really, really sweet. They're all about 18, 19 years old. And then I had an assistant and like that would pop into the class because she was like training to be an English teacher. So I had like a lovely little like small group of people down there within the 3 weeks that were really lovely. And I was like, well, it'll just be better. Like, it'll be fine in Beijing. Like, I'll leave and it'll be fine.
Hey, it was fine the first time around, right?
Yeah, why not, you know? So, but at this point, I'm still, like, I'm wrapping up Nanning, and I'm still sick. Like, I'd gotten a little bit better, but I still wasn't feeling great. I was like, you need to fly me back to Beijing. I can't spend 30 hours on a train again. Like, I'm sick. It's not comfortable. Like, fly me back to Beijing. They're like, no, tickets are too expensive. If you want to fly, you pay for your own ticket. I'm like, you sent me down here. They're like, no, you have to, you just take the train. Well, they're like, the office in the South is paying for your ticket, so you have to negotiate with them and get them to pay for a flight. And they were really nice, but they were like, look, like, we were supposed to have a teacher that, like, everything was paid for, and we lost that money, so, like, we can't really afford to fly you, especially since the tickets are so much more expensive. Like, we could at least pay for a soft sleeper for you. Like, is that okay? Like, yeah. And I was like, okay, I could see that they were really, you know, they got kind of the bad end of the deal there. So I was like, okay, yeah, I'm not going to be difficult. So the soft sleeper was a little bit better. At this point, like, someone had taken me to buy a bunch of the knockoff DVDs, you know, like all the street DVDs. So I had like a few like things to watch to keep me kind of sane through my like sickness. And and the train ride back, there was like three other people that wanted to watch the DVDs with me. So we had like our little like compartment and it felt nice. The second I got back to Beijing, like, all hell broke loose. Like, I told Peter, hey, like, I need you to bring me to a hospital because I need to get another check because, you know, I'm a little bit better, but I'm still sick. He yelled at me for being sick and wasting time. He's like, I will let you go to the hospital this one time, but you, like, are wasting time and you need to be working. And so he sent another intern because the former intern had quit. And he sent another intern who was, like, very young girl who was, like, really shy and, like, her, but she spoke pretty good English. And she took me to a hospital in Dongdaemun, actually. Oh. And they were like, yeah, you had a virus, but you need rest and no stress and, like, and fluids and, like, here, like, Chinese medicine. So yeah. I was like, okay. And I was like, okay. I said to the girl, I forget her name now. I feel really bad. She was really sweet. But she... I was like, she's like, we have to go back to the office now. I was like, well, have you eaten anything? And she's like, no. I'm like, are you hungry? Well, yes, but no, like, we can't stop to eat. I'm like, he's not going to know how long we've been in the hospital. We haven't been there that long. And of course, I'm sick. I need to eat greens. So in the downstairs of the office was this restaurant called Herbal Cafe, which used to be a chain that was like around, all around Beijing. It was like a Hong Kong chain. Okay. And I could always find the broccoli and like the steamed shrimp dumpling. So I was like, at least I'm eating something that's like slightly healthy.
Yeah.
Because I hadn't eaten really any healthy food before then. So I, we sat down and I was like, I'll pay for it. I don't want you to worry because it was like more expensive than her, what she could afford for sure.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, like, you deserve to eat good food. And she's like, okay, it'll be our little secret. But she was like, but just so you know, like, Peter doesn't want me to give you, like, I'm not allowed to give you my phone number. Like, we can't talk, like, outside of Peter. Like, so there, I was like, okay, this is weird. He has this, like, weird kind of control, like, overlord type of mentality. And I'm like, I'm not in full health right now to, like, be ready to stand up to him, but I'm going to just be really wary. And, of course, the next few days are like a bunch of mystery, me being with him all day, like at all hours, and while he's like reading the paper and we're eating in the middle of nowhere and he's like stopping on the side of the road and like chatting to people. And I'm like, I have all these questions. And he's like, if you are good on Friday, you can ask one question.
What?
He literally said those words to me. And I was like, huh. He's like, stop asking questions. Like, and then he'd like, and then he'd yell at me and then he'd be like, oh, but like, you know, American girls have very big boobs. And like, he would say things that were so offensive. And I was very, very uncomfortable. And there was always an intern with us. And so at this point, there was another intern in the car with us, and she was going to be staying with us. And I was like, wait, so Peter, you live here too? You're going to live with us? And he's like, no. But he was staying there. Yeah. And he's the only one who had the keys to the house. He said, you'll get keys later. And I was like, when is later? So I had no keys to the house. And then the intern is also staying there too. So I was like, at least there's another person here. But my cousin had been in China for the last few years, and I hadn't seen her in a really long time, but she worked out in a school in Chongping, and she was messaging me. She's like, hey, are you here? Like, when are we going to meet up? And I'm like, so there's a lot that's going on. Like, I'm not really sure what is happening. I'm still kind of sick, but like, I'd love to see you. I'm going to ask permission to leave and like go by myself to try to find you. Now, this is out up at the top of line five. She works in Chongping. So she was like, okay, this is what you have to do. You have to get to the subway and you have to take line 13, this stop. Then you have to take this bus for 45 minutes and okay. Then you walk like 2 miles and then you'll get to my school. And at this point I was like, yes, I could do something on my own. Sure. So yeah. he let me go on Sunday because it wasn't a work day.
Oh, how
he was
nice
like,
of him.
He was like, okay, you will go, but you have to come back. And I was like, well, yes, I'll come back, obviously. So I spent the day with her at her school and she was like, yeah, this doesn't seem great, but it's also, you know, just give it time. Like, maybe you can find a better job and like, but it's, you know, maybe typical, like this kind of thing can happen. Like, so don't stress out too much, but it felt better just like seeing her. And then she took me to Wudalco and we went and had like fake Mexican food. And like, okay. So it was like a little bit of a break. And then I got back and then within 2 days it got like really, really bad. Peter was getting like verbally abusive and like, I had figured out, just because I have a really good sense of direction, it's like one of the few things I pride myself on, like I have good visual memory, and I remembered how to get from our place walking to the subway, and then from the subway I knew how to get to the office. And so I was like, okay. It's like, Peter, do you need me to, like, we're not even getting to the office till 1 p.m., and then we're staying till like 10 p.m. Can I just meet you there by 1 to start work? Can I have the morning to myself, like, yeah. to go, like, go to a cafe, like internet, like sort out things. And he's like, he wasn't happy about it, but then he realized like he got a break, I guess. So he was like, fine. And actually, but laughing, thinking I was going to get lost and like have to call him for help. And I was like, nope, I will not get lost. I'll get there. So I found a cafe, which is no longer there. I remember looking for it a few years ago. It was called French Bakery, and it was near Jianguomen.
Sounds like where we are now.
Yeah. And I remember emailing everybody I knew that had ever been in China and, like, my former boss. And I was like, this is the situation. Like, I need another job. Like, I can't stand this. This is not going to work. Like, this is going to be, like, I know this isn't a good situation. They're not paying me, and I have no freedom. I'm, like, a prisoner. And, like, I'm uncomfortable.
Okay, so you checked out at this point. That's where I was wondering.
Because I knew that I had to get better first. I had to, like, have my full strength. Right. I was still sick, and it was, I was, like, a little dizzy. And I was, like, okay, by the time I'm starting to feel better, and I'll feel better if I have more and more independence. Like, if I have time to go find healthy breakfast, if I have time to, like, work out a little bit. Like, if I... Because there was no lock on my door. So I was, like, very on edge.
And can't even sleep, then.
No, I was, like... And it was freezing, and So I got, but people were being really sweet to me. People were emailing me like, hey, like I can forward your resume. Like, where do you want to be in Shanghai? Or people I'd met in South China were like, sure, come back to, you know, our province, like come back here. And I'm like, well, I'd like to connect with like at this point I'd figured maybe there are other job opportunities in Beijing. And there were a lot of teaching opportunities. So I was like, okay, I don't have to stay here for no pay when I feel really uncomfortable. The Tuesday, so Sunday I had seen my cousin. By Tuesday, I met them in the office at the start time in the afternoon. And he was like shouting at me, like, Brittany, you will go interview these girls who are here and test their English. Like, you have to come to this room. I was like, okay. Like, let me get my purse. Like, my purse had my passport and my money and everything. And he's like, no, I'm like, what do you mean no? He's like, you leave your purse. And I'm like, what? But that office where I'd leave it is not locked. And I get it. Like, you haven't introduced me to anyone in this office. No one really knows who I am. I'm only talking to the random interns you keep bringing in. I don't leave, even in America, I don't leave my purse anywhere.
Right.
It's got my stuff. And he's like, you do what I say or bad things happen to you. And at that point, it was like this inner fire was just like lit, and it was like protection mode. And I was like, nobody talks to me that way. And so I raised my voice, and like the rest of the office could hear like a negative interaction. I was like, I'm going to call the police. I go to the police. I'm going to go to my embassy. And I was like, you're going to give me my boss's number right now. I'm going to talk to her. And he's like, no, she will. And then he was like, ting-budong. And
so, now he doesn't understand
English. Yeah.
All of a sudden.
And I was like, I'm done. So I grabbed, literally, I was like, I'm willing to leave all my stuff behind out in the suburbs if I have to, but I have like I had my backpack and with my computer, and I had my passport and my money. So I was like, you know what?
Okay.
I'm fine.
Yeah,
got the clothes on my
need?
Back. Yeah. I'm going to be okay. And so I sat downstairs in Herbal Cafe waiting for him like to confirm like a message from the boss. And then, so then she was like Skyping with me. So I'm like, I don't think it. So I do believe maybe she did exist, but she didn't really care. She was someone who was just like making money and was traveling, and she was just like, okay, I understand the situation, because she's typing with me, she's not talking on the phone with me. She's like, I understand the situation. She's like, but you know, I was like, you need to pay me what you owed me, like the stipend of like, I've worked now with your company for like a month and a half, like,
yeah.
And she was like, okay, we will Western Union you the money. And I was like, here's the information, like, where do I go? Like, and so none of that was ever intended to send to me. And I was like, okay, I need to get my stuff. I do not feel safe around Peter. You need to arrange for, you need to send me the address. And she said, well, I don't know the address. Peter arranged it. I'm like, you don't know where someone you're employing is staying? Only one person has that information. She's like, I don't know. He has it. So you have to be nice to him. I'm like, no. I'm like, you need to arrange someone else to let me in that house. I'm not going there with him.
Yeah.
And she was like, okay, I'll let you know. So she's like, okay, the intern will meet you at the end of her workday at 6 o'clock tomorrow, and you will take the subway together. And I was like, I don't trust this. So I messaged my cousin, and she was like, well, let me see what I can do. Maybe like I can go with you, or I can see if one of my coworkers like can come too. And so she's like, okay, my coworker who has a car. Can meet you, can meet us like at the end of the subway. And I was like, great. Cause she's like, and then you can direct us by sight from the subway, right? I'm like, yes.
Okay.
So I was like, this is going to be my backup. And I said, okay, tell the intern that, I'll meet her, at the end of subway line 5 at this time. And she had secretly gotten my number, and she was like, we have to be very careful. Like, Peter is onto us. He found out that we have each other's numbers. And then later on, she was like, I will meet you at this time. Then all of a sudden she's like, I have a family emergency. I cannot meet you. So Peter will meet you. And I'm like,
oh no,
you tell Peter, I will meet him at the house.
Yeah.
And she was like, he will meet you there. Like, after work. We had to wait like several hours before this dude rocks up.
Yeah.
I think his face went white as I get out of a Jeep with like two very tall foreigners, because he wasn't expecting me to be with people. He was expecting me to be alone.
Right.
And the whole time I was in Nanning, I was like, is my stuff going to be safe here? Like, I didn't bring all of my clothes with me to Nanning. I only brought like one like bag full of stuff.
Yeah.
And he's like, of course it will be safe. But at this point I'm like, I don't, he's probably stolen whatever he can out of my bags, but I don't even want to interact with him. I just want to take what I can. So he was being really weird, and we came in just in and out, just grabbed my stuff. And then we had to, we went back to my cousin's school book, because it was like after hours, it was too late to sign in. So they had to like sneak me in, and
wow.
You know, it was, and then it was like the first time I could breathe. I was just like, let out this like big, like, I mean, later I opened my suitcase and he had stolen weird things. Like he had stolen one of my iPod touches, because I had brought an extra one. Because the office had asked me if I could bring Apple products to like sell them. And I was like, so oh. I was like,
red flag.
And I was like, so I had bought like 2 extra iPod Touches to sell them. And okay. like one of them I had brought with me to Nanning and like given to like a friend I had met down there.
Okay.
Because he helped me out so much. And then the other one he stole. Wow. And he stole, I had this like self tanning lotion.
Huh.
Which I think maybe he didn't realize was like tanner. He just thought it was like fancy American lotion. So yeah. I'm like, that's pretty funny. If he put it on his body, he like turned like orangey.
Yeah, but did he show up orange one day?
Yeah, or? No, because I didn't ever see him after that. But then I, in the, so actually between the day, something interesting happened in between the day that I left the office and then the next day when I could get my stuff, I went to a hostel because okay. I was like, you know, I'm not going to go back there now after I've just embarrassed this guy, shamed this guy, and yeah. who knows what he's capable of. And some of the interns had been like, Peter is not, like, very good. He's not a good man. And then, but they were very afraid of him. So I was like, okay, I'm not going to be around this dude alone. So my cousin was like, well, tonight, like, you can't do anything. Get your stuff. Like, just stay in a hostel. Like, just relax. Like, go eat some food. Like, whatever you want to, like, just do what you want. And I was like, okay, good advice. So I'm in the hostel and I'm like very stressed and like just typing and trying to like find, you know, whatever information I can. And my old boss from the Disney program put me in touch with her old company in Beijing. And I set an appointment to meet with them the next afternoon because I had all day to wait before I could go pick up my stuff. And so I had like a morning to, I knew I had like a morning appointment with them. So I was like, okay, one thing at a time, like I can get through this. I am strong. Like I will make this happen. It'll be fine. And I'm in the hostel and there's all these people like drinking and partying. And I had like no patience for any of that. People kept, they're like, hey, and I'm like, leave me alone. I'm just like, And then at the end of the day, this Irish guy came over to me and he was like, excuse me. And I like almost bit his head off. And then I was like, I realized, I'm so sorry. I'm just really stressed right now. You know, I'm going through a difficult situation, so I apologize. And he's like, I was just asking if I could get on Facebook. Like, I couldn't get on, and I was wondering if there was a problem. I was like, oh, yeah, Facebook's blocked in China. Sorry about that.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh. And then he just, like, every so often he'd come over and just give me a beer and, like, walk away.
<that's> nice.
Which was nice.
It's funny how his life just sucks so bad because he can't get on Facebook. And
right, no. I think later on it was... It was like an icebreaker, just chatting in a hostel with people, you know, like as you do. And then like later on the night, I couldn't look at the computer anymore. And he kept inviting me to come to things like, oh, you want to come to like the night market? And I was like, no. And then at the end of the night, he just like sat with me and like talked. He was like, tell me like what's going on. And it was just nice to just like tell another human being like what I was worried about. And like, you know, I was too ashamed to like call people from back home and like say like what was going on. And
yeah, like admit that it's going badly.
Yeah, and I was like foot in mouth. Like I'm too stubborn. I was too impulsive. And like, look, it's not working out. But I was like, no, I need to just figure out the next steps. Like, I need to figure out my visa because they also brought me here on like a business visa, which of course is, you know, it's super common here, but it's not standard and you're not supposed to do that.
Yeah.
So they were telling me I had to leave the country immediately. Like I had to leave within like a few days and they would cancel. But actually I knew that I had leverage when I found out the next day. They're like, they can't, without your passport, and they didn't give you your visa. You got your visa by yourself. They can't cancel anything.
They don't really have
your stuff.
Oh, okay.
They're just threatening you because they're worried you're going to get them in trouble or like send police after them and stuff. So they're like, you're good. You have your 90-day at a time, year-long business visa. So just as soon as you get another job, like you can have them sponsor your work visa. So I was like, great. Okay. At least I'm not going to get in trouble like legally. I'm not working right now, so I'm just here looking for jobs. And it was like a one thing checked off. That's fine. And I was like, maybe I can. I couldn't really stay with my cousin because she was working at the school, so I wouldn't want to do that to her. And like, I was like, okay, I'm going to have to find an apartment. I'm going to have to find jobs. And then, you know, I escaped, got my stuff, and then I spent a few days with my cousin. And then I was like, okay, I'm going to get a hostel in the city. And she's like, yeah, that would be great. We can like kind of do touristy stuff together. And, you know, we hung out with that Irish guy some more and he was like, why don't you come traveling with me? Like, and I was like, that's so crazy. Like, why would I do that right now? Like, I need to figure out my life. And at that point, I went on like a few interviews, and I had, and then someone I had met also put me in touch with someone who needed like a weekend teacher in Da Tong.
Oh, yeah.
And so I was like, at this point, I had like just lost money. Like, I had not made any money in China. And I was like, just my bank account was hurting. So I was like, okay, I need some gigs to get a little bit of money. So I did it. I took a train ride to Da Tong. And that was an experience being, I felt like a celebrity. Like, they treated me so well. They picked me up from the air, from the train station, took me out to dinner.
We deserved it.
I know. Like, I taught like, for like 8 hours on Saturday and like 6 hours on Sunday. They took me to another fancy like dinner, and then they put me on the train back to Beijing. And you know, it was a good amount of money for a weekend of work. And they were like, can you live in Da Tong? Can you just move to Da Tong? And I'm like, okay, so now I'm thinking I might have some more options for jobs in China. Like, I don't have to just jump on the first thing that I find. Yeah. And especially now that I'm super wary and not trusting, I'm going to take my time. Like, I'm going to make sure I'm comfortable. I find a job that's going to be not just legitimate, but it's going to, like, help me grow, not just going to, like, you know, pay me money and, like, it's mindless. I need a job that's going to push me.
I mean, you're not, like, 18 at this point.
No,
like,
I was 25, so I...
Yeah, like, you don't just want a bit of money and the experience of living in another country. Like, you want to grow your career.
Yeah, so I came back from the weekend. I was like, okay, let me think about this. I would really like to travel a little bit so that I like China, so that I'm like, oh, this is a beautiful country, or there's great things about it. Because right now I'm feeling really like wary of everything. And once I get a full-time job, I know that I might not have vacation days, or maybe I don't have time off. So maybe now would be a good time to travel. So I, again, maybe my mother would call me impulsive, but I decided, hey, I'm going to, travel around for a little bit. So went down to Yunnan, went to back to Guangxi, actually, and then went up to Guilin, which I never had a chance to do, Yangshuo.
Yeah, beautiful places.
Yeah, and just relaxed, and I felt like my stress just started to, like, melt away. And it was a really beautiful experience. All the funny things. This was China before WeChat, and China before a lot of people had smartphones. So it was a lot of negotiating, haggling, just trial and error, finding things out. And came back to Beijing, and someone I had met through that Irish guy's name's Nicholas became my friend, and he introduced me to his cousin who had moved to Beijing, who was a journalist, and she was one of my first friends in Beijing because she lived in Beijing. So she invited me to the Irish ball and, you know, introduced me to who became my boss. Like, he was looking for teachers, and he was looking for, like, specific, like, business English trainers. And she was like, I think, you'd be interested to talk to him. And so I remember having, like, an initial, like, phone chat with him while I was on the train coming back from like one province to the other, and like kind of telling him a little bit about my background and trying to ask him questions. I remember saying goodbye to my friend, and at the airport I sat down and I was like, okay, now I need to find a place to live. Now I have like some part-time work while I decide what I want to do. Now I got to find an apartment. So the first apartment I went to see was in Tuan Jiahu. And so near the Sanlitun area, and with a Norwegian girl. And she was lovely. And she was like, here's a room. It was like 2,000 kwai a month. It was a small room, but it was a nice apartment.
For Beijing, that's really cheap, especially in that area.
Well, nowadays, I think the rent is all two or three times the price in that area. Okay. But she was like, you can move in right away. And I was like, okay. Time to sort out my life, and that's when it was like that led up to when I started working for that small startup that was American Chinese owned, it was when I got really, really into education. I was like, okay, I'm gonna develop my English teaching skills, and so that was the Welcome to China experience with a lot of other like mini shenanigans along the way that maybe are too too personal to share.
But that's tough already. That's a lot of shenanigans. God, that story is crazy. I can't believe you stayed, really.
Yeah, but like, the thing is, I think I was just too stubborn. to leave. Sure. Like, I remember finally telling my parents what happened, and I know they were quite upset to hear that I didn't tell them what was going on and that I went through a situation like that, and that I wasn't coming home. But I was like, guys, I don't want to have, like, this negative impression, or just like that 4 months I went to China and everything blew up, you know, like, I want to come back with, like, yeah, that's a story, but this is how I made it work.
Yeah.
And then things just kept getting, from that situation, everything in China for me was amazing. I was like, wow.
Okay.
Like, a legitimate company. Wow. Like, people who aren't trying to cheat me. Wow. Like comfortable, like, an apartment that has heat. Oh my goodness, I can find coffee. Like, oh, like,
the little things.
The little things I just became so appreciative of. Whereas I think if I had come to China when everything had been set up for me, maybe, yeah, I would have been a lot more negative about things, or maybe a little bit more, like, critical. But I was just so, from that point on, like, I was like, wow, I'm so grateful. Like, oh my goodness, and then from there, you know, it was six more years of different interesting professional opportunities and a way of kind of like what you were saying, talking about with Morgan, like, you kind of have transformed yourself in different ways. Like, my goal wasn't initially to, like, come here and be fluent at Chinese, but I wanted to learn Chinese and I wanted to grow myself professionally. But actually, I think my whole mindset shifted from being here and being abroad and being an expat in difficult situations. So,
yeah, now you can deal with anything. If you can deal
hopefully,
with that.
Hopefully, hopefully. But so. I think I'm starting to be ready for the next challenge, which now I feel like I have more fear from leaving China, which is what's more comfortable,
well,
than staying, right?
Maybe that's a sign that it's time to leave.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, before you talk about anything else, I think we need to do some sort of public service announcement here.
Talking so much. I'm sorry.
It's all good. No, that was a fascinating story. I mean, that belongs in a book or something.
I did write it down so that I could read it like a story, and yeah. I can't find that notebook. I don't know what happened to that notebook. I had it up until recently. It might be in the U.S. actually, but I'd be interested to, like, actually read that out loud, because that was, like, what I was feeling at that time.
At that moment. Yeah. 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 I mean, even now, just telling it, you're...
I'm filtering through experience.
You've got great recall. Oh.
Well, it was quite... You know how the certain things, even from years and years ago, stick out in your mind,
sure,
your heart, right?
Yeah.
Whereas, like, you can't remember what you did at this point last year, maybe,
right,
or, like, a few months ago. You're like, what was I doing?
Yesterday.
Yeah.
Who knows? Yeah, that's an extreme story, though. But, okay, I think a lot of people might be listening to this and thinking about maybe coming to China, and they've got some kind of gig, and they're like, oh my God, is that what's going to happen to me?
No.
How
no,
do you
okay.
know? What can you look out for? What are the red flags?
So I think nowadays there are way more resources, and, I mean, there are way more connections and ways to filter, like, employers.
Yeah.
So what I would recommend is finding a personal recommendation from someone who's lived here, or who could connect you to someone who's legitimately lived here and has the experience. So ask them, hey, have you heard of this company? Do you know anything about them? To just do kind of like an initial kind of like background check. You could also start with, like, the companies that are more well-known, or, like, more corporate, or, like, depending on what you're coming here to do. So if you're coming here with kind of no job lined up, I wouldn't recommend that nowadays, because the visa laws are a lot stricter. So I would try to source like a company that has lots of employee referrals or testimonials, right?
Okay.
So, like, if you're coming here to teach English, like, you start with the big employers and then work your way through and ask for, like, different recommendations. See if you could have a phone call. A Skype call, WeChat call, download WeChat before you get here. See if you can have an actual legitimate conversation with someone who's going to be your supervisor, your boss, a colleague, so you could get an honest answer to your questions.
Okay.
Because, you know, you might also have a job that might seem like, oh, like, they seem shady because their English isn't perfect, but actually it's quite opposite. Like, you know, it's a great place to work, but the HR person's English isn't great. So, you know, if you could ask directly to talk to someone and get a colleague testimonial and talk to who would be your boss, like, I would say start with there. In terms of job searching, I think nowadays, I'm actually going through this now, I'm trying to find jobs elsewhere. And projects elsewhere. So I'm trying the job search all over again, and I'm looking on LinkedIn. And so now there are a lot more, like, ways of finding finding jobs than there were several years ago. Yeah, so use technology to your advantage, but always, always, like, try to see if you can talk to the people you'll work with. Because
that's a good idea.
Get a sense of, like, who these people are. And if they're... Also, I've noticed, I knew someone who last year got offered a job, and he was just sending a lot of fact-finding questions. Uh-huh. Like, hey, and then they decided to not offer him the contract because he asked too many questions and he was troublesome. Which I thought was ridiculous, because I would want to work with someone who was inquisitive and wanted to make sure that they knew everything.
Yeah.
I wouldn't look at that as a bad thing. But again, so even if you ask a lot of questions and they tell you, oh, stop asking questions, that's a sign. You don't want to work there.
Yeah.
So ask a lot of questions and, or even come. So I came to Beijing blind. Like, I had no idea what it was like, besides just having met Chinese people from all over China. I didn't really even do any research on the city. So if you were to come to China, find out about the city you want to live in, see if you can come over and visit, come on a trip, and like get a feel for the place too. If you're a little bit more risk-taking, you would just want to take the leap, like go for it, but try to line up an opportunity beforehand so that you don't have to worry about visas, you don't have to worry about security. And maybe if you don't know where to begin, starting by downloading WeChat and getting any kind of referral from someone. So if there's someone you know who's been in China, like a friend of a friend, add them on WeChat and start asking them questions.
Yeah, it's really good you had your cousin here.
Yeah,
you know, and like, it's just having someone
It was like, she was super helpful. I mean, she just kept me sane in that time. And she was really busy too, because she's a teacher and she was starting her semester. And so I felt horrible, like, asking for her to help me. And, you know, she was just great. You know, she kept me sane, kept me smiling. And she's like, yeah, let's go and travel around. So, after a few months, like, on occasional weekends, we would do, like, little... We did a trip to Tianjin. We did like a trip to Shanghai Guan. And so it was really nice, because we didn't really grow up together. We didn't see each other that often growing up. So I got to know her as an adult, and it was really great. And it was at the end of her China experience, because she was then only here till when did she leave? Like 6 months after that. So she left in the summer.
Okay.
So then she was saying goodbye to China as I was saying hello. So that was nice in there, but. I made the decision just because I was like, it seems like it's a good place to be. China's exciting. I'll only be there for 6 months, and 6 months turned into 6 years.
Yeah. Oh, it's so great. You turn things around. Yeah. Wow. I don't know. This is just a fantastic story of like hitting rock bottom, basically, and then turning it around and coming back and making it a great experience.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really grateful I did it. I wouldn't take it back.
Yeah.
In retrospect, of course, I would have planned better, but maybe... Part of me is like, if I had actually waited till I had a job or come, maybe my whole China experience would have been completely different.
Yeah.
You don't know the whole butterfly effect, right?
Sure. These things change your whole life. Mm-hmm. Bad experiences, hopefully you learn and hopefully you grow from them.
Yeah. I was afraid it would make me too paranoid and skeptical, but actually it's just helped me be a little bit more discerning about opportunities that I take and things I leap into. But I still liked that. I will still have that bit of courage to do that. It's just like, I'm more fearful about maybe more traditional things, like having signing a contract for a job with no vacation days or things like that. That makes me a little bit more on edge than taking a leap into the unknown.
Stick up for yourself more. And like the whole getting sick thing, man, there's just so many stories. Yours is the most extreme, I think, with people getting sick.
There is this one funny moment, actually. So the end of January or the early February, before, I think early February, so when Paul and I went to that little train ride down to Beihai, and we're by the ocean, and I started to get really sick, and we went and explored these caves. We couldn't get a ride back from the caves to Nanning, because it was closer to Nanning, and so we had to hitch a ride with a Chinese family in the back of this van, and they had like live chickens in the van, and that was my first like, whoa. There was chickens right behind me, like, and underneath the seat, and I was like, whoa. But then we were traveling around Nanning, and I was starting to get like really overheated, and I was like, Paul, we need to get off this bus. I need to like sit down. Like, I'm really feeling really faint. And he's like, okay, no problem. So we get off the bus at the next stop. And we walk to, having a very excited conversation behind us.
Yeah, we've got an authentic experience.
Yes,
we've also had the soothing music the whole time. Telling this intense story. You
know? I like the contrast.
I talk about this all the time, but I've learned to just give up on trying to find a really quiet place. Because there's just no such thing.
Actually, I was going to suggest my apartment, but then I've noticed they've started drilling above.
That would happen,
I'm like,
of course.
Actually, during the day, it wouldn't be quiet. It would be worse than a cafe. But so we get off the bus and we see a KFC. And I'm not a big fan of fast food, but I was like, okay, we can get in and get water. I don't even make it into the door. In the doorway, I pass out. I faint because I was just so drained and obviously sick.
Well, would they go in there anyway? They had chickens in the car.
No, this was after we got back to the city. This was like the next day or the day after that.
Oh, okay.
We're touring around the city and I was feeling really sick. This is when I was really starting to get sick. And
poor
Paul, he was like, oh my God, you fainted too fast for me to catch you. Like, I'm so sorry. And I was like, don't worry about it. He's like, but I was in shock because you fainted in the doorway and not one person stopped to help you or see if you're okay. No one looked at you. They just stepped over you and kept walking and stepping over you to get into KFC. And he's like, I just was in shock. And then you started to come too. And then I helped and we sat on the curb because they I think were afraid of, at that point, it wasn't that long after, so long after SARS. So there was
sure.
So people just were like, I'm not going anywhere near that girl. And so I just sat down. He got me a tea or something to try to give me a little sugar. And he's like, I can't believe that happened. And it's funny because I have this tendency to faint when I'm sick. Like if I'm really sick, when I was in England as a student, I had been sick with, I think, something similar, like a virus that I was, very lightheaded, dehydrated. I couldn't eat. And so because in London I walked everywhere and I didn't have any money for taxis and stuff, I pushed a little too hard to walk to the clinic. I walked 2 miles. And then I thought, oh, I'll be fine. I'll walk by myself, walk back. No problem. And my friends were at my house at the time, planning our trip to Italy. And on the way back, I had to stop at the pharmacy to get my prescription. Okay. And I fainted in the pharmacy. But in England, everybody's I came to and I had this little girl in front of me and all these people around me. And they're like, are you okay? Pick me up, put me on a chair, got me apple juice, made sure I was okay. And I'm laughing because then in China I was thinking to myself, I was like, this is not, I'm not in England anymore.
No.
It was just the opposite experience.
It's such a haunting thing when that kind of thing happens.
And I was like, okay. But then I notice on the other side of that, the kindness of people in the everyday was so different from America. I'd be in Nanning, or I'd be even in Beijing and places and be lost or struggling to figure out how to say something, and people would go out of their way to help me. People would leave their store and walk me somewhere. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, wow, this would not happen in America on a regular basis. And I was like, I seek such kindness, but then also when you think you'd need help, people don't want anything to do with you, right? But I'm like, that's protection. It's also keeping themselves safe, or they figure they'll be fine. They don't need to individually help the person, but it's interesting because it's such a contradiction, right?
It's a huge cultural difference. I think it's pretty deep too. I think part of it is just lawsuits.
Yeah, that's true. No good Samaritan law here.
There's videos of old people throwing, literally just jumping in front of a bus to try to get hit.
Opposite
money.
Way. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And then if somebody does get hurt and you try to help them, then they could sue you.
Yeah, potentially. Yeah, I'd heard that that was maybe changing.
Oh, maybe.
Yeah, I hope so. Because it really makes you, even as, and I know for you, maybe you've experienced this, you might question whether or not you get involved if there's a sort of an accident around you. I've never witnessed anything traumatic or where someone really, really needed help. It was always people crowded around them anyway. But I'm always, as a foreigner, a little bit worried about getting involved, because I've seen them shout when a guy, I was on a bike and I was in the back of the bike lane, and I saw this woman just fell over. Nothing hit her. There's an older woman on a bike, and she said something. I couldn't hear her, but all of a sudden everyone swarmed this foreign guy on a bike, started screaming at him and like stopping him from going. So I think she just, and maybe he might have cut her off or something, but he didn't put, like, she didn't hit anything. She just literally fell over. And the guy was just like, what? We're like, what's going on? And like, they weren't letting him leave. And I was like, I'm quickly going to cycle away.
Yeah,
like,
get out of there.
I can't get involved in this situation right now. They'll probably then say, she was there too. And she.
Like, right, now you're part of it.
Yeah.
That's where the nationalism comes in. And it can get extreme. Yeah.
But yeah, I was like, how can we like remind people that people are people? And like, we all, if we're struggling, like reach out and help. Yeah. But then like, how do you ask people to take that enormous risk for their own safety and protection if there is no protection for them? I mean, it's so interesting just witnessing this, but...
Right, but even beyond the law or whatever, I met this Irish guy who I think explained it pretty well to me, because he was in Vietnam, which, okay, a different country, but still Asia.
Yeah.
He was in Vietnam, biking down the road, and there was a guy just laying there in the middle of the highway. And he was like, cars were just going around him.
Oh,
and he was
goodness.
Like, oh, I got to stop and help this guy. He's going to get hit.
Yeah.
You know, if nothing else. So he like started dragging the guy off to the side. Mm-hmm. And this car pulled up, rolled down the window and said, hey, do you know that guy? And he was like, no, I don't know this guy. I'm just helping him. He's in the middle of the road. And like, what? Like, they couldn't understand why he'd help him. And then he figured out over time that like people you know in this more Eastern culture, people are in your family, close friends, they're real, and you'll go out of your way to do anything for them.
Yeah, okay.
But those random people you see walking around, they might as well not have their own story in their head. They might as well not be conscious beings. They're just like these automatons.
Mm. Okay, interesting.
I mean, maybe that's not quite how it really works, but I think that's like a good model.
Or that's a way of justifying or rationalizing like why you would look the other way if someone is in need or is hurt, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, that was in Vietnam.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
It's just a very different way of looking at humanity and life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the best explanation I've heard.
Okay, I'm gonna think about that.
I know. Yeah. But it's a giant cultural difference.
Yeah.
For sure, it is. And if you live here, you accumulate stories.
Yeah.
Over time,
you know, and I feel I'm super grateful. I've had a lot of like what people could consider weird jobs and opportunities.
Yeah.
So I've gotten to witness like really cool things in China, things that I was like, oh wow, where am I right now? Like pinch me. You know, like I with a sporting event, I got to be on the old city walls of Xi'an, doing Gangnam style in front of Chinese dancers dressed as sexy terracotta soldiers, like next to Justin Gatlin, you know, the one of the fastest runners in the world. I felt really embarrassed. I didn't know who he was before, and I was like, should I know who this is? And they're like, yes, he's super famous. He's like up there with Usain Bolt. Like, he's like super fast. And he was at the time a brand representative for, I want to say, X Step. Oh. Yeah, not Leaning, X Step. And so they were sponsoring this half marathon on the old city walls. And so occasionally with one of my jobs, I've traveled around China doing marathon warm-ups or like warming up crowds of thousands of people to do like happy exercise or stretches.
That's
and
awesome.
Like getting their heart rates up. And so, yeah, and sometimes I have to pinch myself like in Tiananmen Square with Mao in the background.
Yeah.
I'm like leading huge crowd warm-ups for the Beijing Marathon. And you know, and then in Xi'an, I'm like dancing like to a Korean song with a Swedish guy and an American athlete right next to me with sexy dancers behind me. Like, I'm like, this is unreal right now. I'm so grateful that I'm having this experience.
Yeah,
like, this seems like a dream. I'll wake up and like, this didn't happen.
Right. Yeah. It's
and,
still out there.
Yeah. It's weird. And, you know, I also work with Guinness World Records and I get to adjudicate, as I've told you a few times, I get to adjudicate these mass participation records. So it's really awesome to see thousands of people show up smiling and happy to participate in something, you know, where I feel like in other countries, maybe you wouldn't get that many people to show up, give up their free time on a Saturday to stand around, to just be part of an event. Yeah. Where here, yeah. like, actually, that is no, it doesn't really seem to be a problem. People are eager to help and participate and be part of the collective, which
Absolutely.
I guess makes sense with, yeah. with society.
That would fit really well in a country like this.
Yeah, so it's like I've seen people like young and old, like, ready to do, and like some of the records are harder, and like ready to hold an abdominal plank for a minute. And you know what? Maybe they have been practicing, but you know what? They're all there smiling and ready to do it. And that's quite interesting here. Wow. So I've seen that, and then I have the opportunity to like work more in like a coaching format in schools and teaching young kids. I've worked in kindergartens doing a lot of like music and movement, and a big part of the work that I do is like in music, movement, and mindfulness and yoga. And so that's really interesting because, like Morgan was saying, when you're talking to her, kids are kids, right? So
yeah.
It's really fun to like be a giant kid with them too. And
okay.
I have Chinese kids and foreign kids alongside of each other from all different, and they're all just as playful, imaginative, naughty, like cute, like everything all at once. And it reminds me that, like, you know, we are shaped by our cultures, but like at the end of the day, like we're all one, we're all people, so we can relate on so many different levels, even if the language is a barrier. Like
yeah.
a lot of my classes, they don't speak at all, they're just interacting with physical movement, so it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really fun to see like what comes up from there.
So true, all human beings.
And I think I got the biggest compliment ever. I had a bunch of classes the other day, and I was asking them, because it's a new school year, so some of them are new students, a lot of them are my returning students. And they've grown a lot over the summer, and I'm reminding them, I'm like going over the class rules in like my fun, silly way, and like, you know, acting out like a giant like clown, like, do we push? Do we jump? Like, do we hit? No, like, how do we run, you know? And I was like, guys, what class is this? Is this art class? And they're like, no. I'm like, is it science class? No. And one kid just like looked up at me with like this beautiful, like, earnest look, and he's like, it's birthday party class. And I was like, okay. And the teachers are laughing, and the kid is like, no, it's games class. And the other one is like, it's dance class. And like, they all had different interpretations of like what the class was, and I liked that I didn't like set a tone of like, you have to come and you do my dance class, you have to come and do this, because kids will just in their mind, you know, kind of create like an experience. I don't know how to say it exactly. They'll just be as creative as you let them be without having to put like those limitations on them. So it felt cool to know that I left different impressions on different people. And so I was like, okay, I like that, because like my foreign kids and my Chinese kids all have similarities, and every kid is different as well. So it's like, I could be anywhere in the world and experiencing these things. So
that's a good takeaway from it.
I don't know exactly how to like give a good takeaway from that. I get distracted, but just
understanding.
Yeah,
that, you know, we've got our differences, but
yes.
we're all human.
Yeah.
I don't know. I saw a guy with a shirt recently. I think it was probably online. Maybe I saw him in real life. I can't remember. Mm. But he had a shirt on that said 98.5% chimp. Like,
oh yeah,
I guess that's true.
That's
yeah.
a good reminder.
Yeah.
Oh.
All right.
Well, I recently read a book. Speaking of chimps and monkeys, I recently read a fabulous book called Ape House. It's written by the author from Water for Elephants.
Oh, okay.
And so I really like her, because she does like the books. The plot line is fictional, but the books are all highly researched. And this is talking about great apes and like their use with sign language, and how like they have like complete like amazing personalities, and like they're not as animalistic as we would view. Oh, it's just a monkey. Like they're amazing creatures, and I was reminded, like, oh my goodness, like all these. Like, I've recently become more vegetarian, and like thinking about all my choices of what I'm eating, and it's like thinking also about the abuses within like every different industry towards doing experiments on animals. And this kind of touches on like what certain facilities will do to animals, and it reminded me, it's like, you're treating this living being that has like abilities to love and feel, has preferences, like the abilities of this, especially if you give them a language. They even were communicating with each other in American Sign Language.
Okay.
I mean, they had their like own like vocalizations that they would use with each other, but they were, even when they were being recorded, and this is like, she's drawing this from actual like studies and research and her experiences with this one research center. They do sign to each other, and some of the things that they say are so touching.
Wow. I mean, they have entire societies. Yeah. Apes have some superhuman abilities, like, besides strength. Like, you know, well, chimpanzees, maybe you've seen this. You can show them a screen, and they'll put up the numbers, one like, circles with the numbers 1 through 10.
Okay.
10 different circles.
Yeah.
And in random places all over the screen. And they'll just flash, or they'll keep the circles up, but they'll just flash the numbers for half a second.
Okay.
And take the numbers away, and the ape can go and do one, touch the places where the numbers appeared. All 10, 1 through 10.
Wow.
Half a second. Like, no human could ever do that.
I wonder if that's related to, like, attentional blink.
What's that mean?
If we're shown a series of numbers, our ability to recognize, like, a pattern or that number repeating within too close of a space is, it's not so good. Like, we don't actually see, like, the repeating pattern, or we don't, like, if it's too quick, we're not aware of it. Whereas, I read about this because of meditation. Like, meditation could actually shorten that space of recognition. So you're more hyper-focused.
Yeah.
So like think of it as like our brain needs to warm up a little bit. So like we don't actually see, like, we have a series of numbers flashed, like if that pattern repeats or we see that same number, most of us won't register that same number. I'm not explaining this very well, but it is a thing. It's called attentional blink.
Oh, I'll have to look it up.
Yeah, and I wonder if that's related, because all they see is a flash, and they can immediately...
That's it. Yeah.
Mm. I wonder if apes are good meditators.
Maybe. I mean, yeah, maybe they're Zen masters. Whatever's going on in their minds.
It could be.
I don't know.
In the book, the ones that she mentioned were called bonobos. They're of the great ape family. Yeah. But they're really fascinating, and it makes me want to learn more about language.
Yeah, aren't bonobos the really loving ones?
Yes.
Yeah. Like, apes will fight each other to have sex, and bonobos will have sex to avoid having to fight with each other.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, that was one of the things that was brought up in the book.
That thing I heard. Yeah.
There was something that the bonobos were being exploited in the entertainment industry in this book, in this one part of the plot, and they talked about how people were fascinated with watching them, like a reality TV show, because they would like be so sexual and everything, but most of the time it was like not for aggressiveness. It was like to show love, to show affection, to just like stop an argument. Like, they were so sexual. And so people were like, oh my God.
Right.
But it was quite different. It was like, you know, for all different purposes. And it was like really interesting. So I was like, what if humans were more like this? You know, we showed more like love and more like ways of avoiding like, you know, more violent confrontation with just more compassion and touch.
Yeah. I think we do. I mean, for the most part, especially with like people we know, like I was saying, you know.
Maybe your world is a lot more loving than the most.
Oh, that could be. I mean, I can only speak from my own experience. Oh, do you have to get going?
No. Well, I do. You know, I'm going to have a meeting with our other friends soon to discuss communication, which I'm trying to work on too.
All right.
But
it's good.
No, it's great to...
And here I came into this thinking we'd talk about all these other things.
Yeah.
But that was awesome.
Thanks for letting me share. It's kind of cathartic to like to think back on like where I was a few years ago and like that experience. Like,
yeah, you've come a long way. Well, not come a long way, but you're like, you're with it. Like, I don't know. I just, after hearing the story, I expected to be talking to like a really broken person. You know? Like, whoa.
No.
And you're so happy and just like...
Well, yeah. I think I... Like, the one thing that I was, like, holding on to that whole time is, like, I am strong. Like, I can get through this. Like, I'm not going to just crumble. Because maybe it gets to the point where, like, I had an experience a few months ago where I had a physical challenge to overcome. Like, was trucking in, you know, Zhangjiajie, and we had gone down this alternative path, and it was supposed to be 30 minutes, ended up being almost 2 hours. It was getting dark, and we get down to the bottom, and the road is on the other side of a river that's flowing, and with a fence. And there was no, and Zhangjiajie, like, you know, if you're not in the touristy parts or where there's, like, the actual path, there's, like, no ranger stations, like, you know.
Yeah.
You'd be pretty stuck. And we knew that if we had to climb back up, there was, like, and there was nowhere to sleep in the park, and it would have been way too, like, it would have been really dangerous, and a 3 to 4 hour climb back up. And so it was, like, cross the river or just sleep without any camping gear. Yeah. There, right?
They call it being benighted in the climbing world.
Oh, really?
Yeah, when you have to sleep overnight when you're...
Benighted, I like that.
Benighted.
But, I mean, like, it would have been fine, I guess, if we had, like, sleeping bags or a tent or something, but...
That doesn't count as benighted.
Oh, that doesn't. Okay, no. Okay. But it was one of those things where, like, I had been up until that point, I was getting, like, really nervous because it was my... The rocks were unstable as we were climbing down, and I was slipping, and then I... When we were down by... Near the river, there was, like, some... parts with pools of water, and I slipped, and I like my butt got all wet, and like I kind of like lost my cool, and I remember shouting out like F nature, and like laughing at myself later, being like, that was so embarrassing, like I can't believe I shouted that, like I wanted to be so cool, like I wanted to be able to be tough and scrappy, and like I could do this, and I just lost it. But then when I realized we had a river separating us from like getting to a bus to be able to like get the 5K out of the park to be able to like exit the park, right? I was like, I could do this. I will do this. Like, I will be strong. Like, something switched inside of me, and I realized like I could access like mental resilience to get through this. And like, we had to find sticks and like take it one step at a time. And maybe, hopefully, my mother doesn't hear this podcast because that won't make her happy to hear that I like, physically risked my safety just to exit the park because we had taken the wrong route. It was a flowing river, the rocks were really slippery, and you know, it was just like one step at a time, and you know, we were really lucky because it could have gone really, really horribly wrong. But then the good thing is at the end there was a hole in the fence, so we didn't at least have to scale a fence.
So someone else must have done the same thing.
Yeah, maybe. And then we were able to flag down one of the last buses of the day, so that was like super lucky. But I remember thinking to myself, like, you will not crumble. Like, you will not break down at this moment because how is that going to help? So when I think there's that edge between, like, when you're, when you know your safety isn't threatened and things are, like, frustrating or overwhelming, you want to cry or you want to, like, you can break. Mm-hmm. But when you realize that you're at such a low place or, like, there's no other option, there's no other way but through it.
Yeah.
No, wait, what's the expression? There's no other way to it but through it.
Okay, I don't know that one.
I think it's what my friend and business partner says, but I love that. Like, you just have to get through it, right? You have to just keep going if there is no other way. Like, so you need, your mindset is key, right? So I think that was like, I was like, I am strong. I'm not going to be this, like, weepy, like, princess, right? Like, I'm going to just get through the challenge of the beginning of China. Like, I'm going to make it work, and I'm going to make myself like happy about being here. And I'm going to like feel proud about not just putting my head between my legs and flying home, hating China. Cause I didn't want to hate China. So yeah, I guess mindset and like, I guess it was my inner stubbornness of not wanting to break, which is what kept me going.
Great advice. I mean, yeah, you're a fascinating person. I love this conversation.
I was talking to someone the other day. I'm like, it's all about perspective, right? Because I think compared to a lot of expats, like, I'm just normal. Like, and I'm not doing anything extraordinary. Like, I just...
That's pretty extraordinary.
No, I guess maybe we shouldn't compare ourselves, but I'm like, I hear other people's stories every day about, like, their experiences, the lives they've led, and like what they're doing in China, and like the work that they're doing, and what you guys are doing. You guys are doing such a cool thing. You're traveling the world, and like even hearing about how you're dehydrating all of your food and like cooking, and like
Well, that's all like, Katie, but yeah.
Yeah, but no. You've set the intention to do, like, that. That is amazing. I've never done anything like that before where I've spent so much time on the road backpacking and, like living as simply as possible. I'm working on being a minimalist, and that's hard enough with, like, I was telling you about not buying so much coffee and, like, trying to save more money and, like, live more simply. And you guys are literally, like, living out of your backpacks and, like, having a plan, like, every single move so that you're not, like, carrying the weight of the world on your shoulders at all times.
Yeah.
That is extraordinary.
Yeah. Thanks for reminding me.
Sometimes we all need that reminder,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I guess. I've done it for so long, it just feels normal.
But, you know? but again, we all like normalize things.
Yeah, that's true.
After a while. But like, if I talk to people back home and they are like, oh, wow, you're doing such cool things. Or like, you're like, that's amazing. Like, oh, like I haven't done anything like that. But I'm like, no, you've accomplished things. Like you're a real person. Like you're a real human. Yeah. You have like, you've bought a house. Like you've produced a child or you've gotten to this point in your career. Like that to me, as someone who's still living, like, I think, very carefree and like, I don't have a lot of, like serious adult responsibilities, like to me I'm in awe of like people who are adulting and I'm like that is accomplishment, yeah. You know, so I think it's all perspective and we can appreciate ourselves but we could also appreciate people who have chosen different paths and learn from them too. So that's why I still feel we can, like, it's not like once you're an expat you only get along with expats and like you'll never see eye to eye with other people. I think we all can learn from each other's like experiences and mistakes.
Yeah, totally true.
Yeah, and I feel like I'm trying to now reconnect with people that I love and I haven't seen in a long time or spent that much time with in the last few years. And it's really great to see the paths that they've taken and the experiences they've had and what they've learned. And it's great. Like, I feel with each person that I actually spend time talking to, not just texting or, like, sending, like, a Facebook message, but actually spend time in their presence or, like, have a phone call, like... Yeah. I feel like less alone in the world, you know, you just feel more human. And I think we're so addicted sometimes to our devices that like we get further away from that and we feel we're connected, but we're like connected on the grid, just not to humanity.
We're probably more superficially connected than we've ever been, but we're losing the deep connections.
Yeah.
That's what this podcast is all about too, you know, like just meeting people, talking.
Yeah. I love that we got to meet really because of the doc nights and like those meetup and like just because, you know, it doesn't matter where you're from and like what your background is, like a lot of people have curiosity about the way things are done in the world and like what people have discovered and want to share. Yeah. And that's why I'm fascinated by documentaries because I feel like sometimes that will spark a new area of learning for me or like a new interest. And like I'm obsessed with health documentaries and like learning all I can about hacking health and like being like living longer and feeling good as we age. So I probably wouldn't put on a documentary about climate change just for myself, but in a group setting I love it because then I love hearing everybody else's like perspective and like you can share that experience together with another human, not just alone in my room, like on my
Right, that's what's laptop, important, not just watching it, but, like, staying and talking, too, and really hearing someone else's perspective.
Yeah, that's cool.
Things you might not have thought of.
Yeah, I remember a bunch of us were talking after, I think it was the Merchants of Doubt documentary that we watched,
Is that the one with DiCaprio, or is that the
one? DiCaprio was the first one that kicked it off, which I have to give credit for. To my roommate from yoga school, Emma, because she really got me thinking about climate change in a different way. And she's a beautiful person who's very passionate about the environment and like choices, how your choices impact everything and spreading awareness. And she was like, you know, have you watched Before the Flood and all these things? And I really felt I felt really embarrassed because like, obviously everyone knows about climate change, but like I felt like I had been living in my own kind of denial bubble. Not that I denied it, but I just wasn't like thinking about all of my choices as presently. And like, and sometimes I'm on autopilot, like today, like I picked up a water bottle, right? And if I put that little bit more mindful effort, I can use my reusable bottle more often. And so that's why I was like, okay, I want to share this with people and see like what people do on a general basis, what they feel about it. And then it was quite interesting with that night. It brought out a lot of like angry reactions. I don't know if you remember, a lot of people were like really like, well, who doesn't know about this? And like, why is this? Like,
that was my first reaction.
Yeah.
I was angry at the movie actually too.
Mm-hmm. Why is that?
DiCaprio one specifically.
Okay.
It was, I forget this, The Merchant of Doubt was not necessarily climate change.
It was about, it was like tobacco. It was just all about how like the industries just place seeds of doubt so that it delays legislation from, from stopping things. Yeah.
Before the flood or after the flood?
Before.
It's called Before the Flood?
I think it's Before the Flood. Yeah, I think so.
So in that movie, and this is where, like, sometimes when you're making a movie, or when I'm watching a movie, I should say, this is maybe a fault of my own, but I'll get really caught up on one thing, and it's really hard for me to focus on anything else,
because
just piss me off so much with the point they're making. So that's what happened here. So toward the beginning of the movie, they showed a lot of media that was denying climate change, and among them, they showed Donald Trump, and he got up, and he was like, it's really cold today. I thought global warming was real, you know?
Yeah, and of course,
it's like, oh, you're such an idiot. Like, that's obviously not what global warming is.
Yeah.
Like, it's the whole, it's global, not just your place.
Yeah.
And just because it's cold where you are doesn't mean global warming is not real. All right. Yeah. So we all understood that.
Yeah, yeah.
So later in the movie, they were talking about The Revenant, DiCaprio's movie.
Where
he was attacked by a bear.
Yes, yes.
Okay. So they were filming The Revenant, and they were, like, filming it in Canada. And they were, like, they said something like, there wasn't enough snow.
Right.
They needed more snow for the set.
Yeah.
And so they're like, well, now what do we do? We have to find somewhere where there's snow. Mm-hmm. So they moved the whole set. And you're, like, you might think about this and go, wow, this is the reaction they want.
Yeah,
it's
for
you to go, wow, they're in Canada, and there's not enough snow.
Yeah.
But then they said where they moved. Do you remember where they said?
I don't remember.
Ushuaia, Argentina is where they moved.
Oh.
Ushuaia, I've been there. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
It's the southernmost city in the world.
Okay.
And it's at the very bottom of South America.
Okay.
So there's immediately alarms were going off in my head. Like, this is not right. Because Argentina is in the southern hemisphere.
Mm-hmm.
And there was snow there, but not in Canada. They were filming this movie in the summer in Canada.
Okay.
And there wasn't enough snow. Why?
Okay.
Because the globe was getting warmer? No, because it's summer.
It's summer.
And the snow's melting.
And what part of Canada were they originally starting in?
I think Alberta, if I remember.
Okay.
Like Northern Alberta.
Okay.
But the snow was all melting.
Yeah,
Of course, because it's summer, and that's what happens in summer.
But do you know the time frame? Like, how long in between did they stop
it? Oh, well, see, they couldn't. See, that's the thing. All they had to do is wait 6 months for winter.
Yeah,
and the snow would return.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're filming a movie. They've got, like, people to pay. They've got, like, sometimes it becomes cheaper and more cost-effective to move the whole thing.
Yeah.
So they moved to somewhere where it was winter.
You didn't appreciate that little, way of kind of twisting it to show an extreme
example. They moved from summer to winter.
Okay.
In other words, they were using the same argument Donald Trump used earlier in the movie.
Okay.
The weather is the same as the climate.
Yeah.
As if somehow that they're when they use it in their favor, now all of a sudden I'm supposed to believe them.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah. I think there is always the danger of like if like Hollywood is showing you something about an important issue, there is the the tendency to be super dramatic or like, you know, take the wrong argument, like show something just for like dramatic effect
and hope we won't notice.
And then you'll take someone who's very discerning like yourself and be like, now I don't like this movie and now I'm going to be resistant to everything that you're telling me.
I just hate this thing.
Yeah.
'Cause you want to use science on your side.
Yeah.
And now you're using the same arguments that the skeptics use or denialists use.
I hear what you're saying, and I get that as well. I also think that a lot of people were reacting like, well, which one of us doesn't know this? Like, we already know this.
Also,
none of us are climate deniers. Like, this is ridiculous that it takes Hollywood to show us this. However, I think for the vast majority of at least Americans that are like kind of living, you know, on autopilot or in a bubble and worried about protecting their like way of life, maybe if it does wake anybody up to like, oh, I didn't realize how bad it was, like, maybe that can be a good thing too. Like, yeah. Although what's the, and they said they tried to offset the carbon footprint of the making of the movie by doing other things,
that's
you
thing,
know,
yeah.
So it's interesting, but I think that's what's great about this kind of experience. Like, even a good or bad documentary, It elicits discussion. You have a chance to learn new things you didn't. I didn't realize that that was why you disliked the movie. I didn't hear that part of the argument. I don't know if you shared that. But,
no, I don't think I shared it. I was just too fired up.
Yeah,
I was like,
but
I can't even talk about
but
this.
But I really loved that, though. Like, this is what, again, like, this is, okay, we can, like, live in the modern day. We can screen a movie and, like, watch, like, something that someone downloaded very quickly. But we can all sit around, eat real food, and talk to each other. And discuss
issues.
And I think that's like my dream night. I want to do that again. So.
Whatever you think about it, right. It's just great to be able to just hang out with interesting people and they've all got their perspectives.
Yeah, sure. especially like in Beijing, there are so many interesting and intelligent people too. Like expats from all different backgrounds and locals who have like such like thirst for knowledge and like different experiences that I'm like, wow, I just want to just like be a fly on the wall all the time and hear what people have to say. It's great.
Yeah, it's totally true. I mean, it takes a certain person, I think, to move to halfway around the world to China and, you know. Maybe not. Okay. I'm sure there's a lot of regular folks here, too, you know. But
yeah, no, I get what you're saying,
though. Just the percentages
though.
Of, like, people who are like, whoa, you've got a really different way of looking at things than most.
Yeah, well, I know a lot of people talk about how, like, you know, the people you meet in Beijing are, like, not all English teachers, right? They're, like, very diverse, bit different backgrounds, and, like, it's not sometimes, it's easy in a lot of ways to live here, and then, yet a lot of times it's not so easy.
As you've demonstrated.
Yeah, and, or just even air quality, right? Everyone always has to bring that up eventually, like, pollution makes it really difficult to, like, you know, maintain a sense of, like, good health without being very careful.
Yeah.
So, I think if you're not a little bit tough, a little bit scrappy, or resilient at least, like, it's going to be hard to live here.
Gotta be,
for sure.
Yeah.
So maybe it weeds out the people that are, I don't know, that just would complain about everything. Although, it's human nature to complain, so I feel like people
still
complain.
Exist.
Yeah.
The whole, that's an interesting point that you make, though, about the global warming. Mm-hmm. Because
She's our timekeeper.
Oh, we've got to wrap it up.
Yeah, she said it's after three.
But when you're living in Beijing, half the days you don't need to see a documentary about global warming. You just look at the air.
Yeah, yeah, that's really
frightening. And it's right in your face.
Yep.
And so it's obviously there, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a different thing, but it's obviously
that's
a
like,
type of pollution.
It's like really uncomfortable when you just like if you actually step back and think about it, you're like, oh my god.
Yeah.
Like, look at this. Like, I see the destruction here.
Right. You can see it with your own not see it.
Feel it. I'm like, oh, now I feel like crap.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And that's not how anyone wants to live. You know?
No, definitely not.
All right, Brittany. Well, it's been a great talk.
It's so nice to chat with you too, Dan. It's great that you guys are spending your time traveling the world and you're still making time to chat with people and tap back into your Beijing connections and family here.
Totally. I mean, this is super important too for me. It's a big part of my trip, I think, is going to be just meeting people and just hearing the stories. And so now you're a part of it, and I really appreciate taking the time to do this.
I like your website, and I like your I like the concept behind this too, because I love podcasts, and it's like really nice. It's a nice like informal style, and it's like listening to a podcast, I think, like, as I'm, like, making breakfast is, like, an alternative to me than to, like, meditation. It's, like, it feels like it's the same sort of, like, massage for my brain.
Oh, that's great.
And it's, like, really stimulating, and you learn a little bit, like, with whatever you listen to, so.
Great feedback, and that was the uplifting music to wrap it up.
Thank you once again to Brittany Dunn for coming on the show and telling that awesome story. And thank you all for listening. As usual, for more information about Brittany and about my podcast and this year-long adventure that my wife Katie and I are on, you can always head over to my website, 1000daysbetween.com. Thanks for listening, and I'll catch you next time.